show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, victims! Well, there's no doubt about it. I've been rode hard and put up wet, but I'm home, and I'm back behind the microphone in the studio, and I couldn't be happier.
Yay!
That's why I couldn't be happier. That and Ferg and Margie and Doodle, and it's just good to be back home. Had a wonderful trip. Had a wonderful trip to beautiful Wisconsin. It's my third time there now, and I fall a little bit more in love with the place every time I'm there. This time I got to see Madison, and Madison was a lovely, beautiful place, and being at the Fighting Bob Fest meant that I was there and got to hear some amazing progressive speakers, tons of passionate commitment to working class people, to the things that make all of America prosper, and not just some fraction of 1%. Hi! I'm Bob Kincaid. Almost forgot to tell you that. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. We like to call what we do here conversation radio. It is listener supported, and it is listener driven. It is what you want to bring to the table that matters most in this 3 hour exercise in conversation radio. I will naturally have things on my mind, but you too will have things on yours. And what matters to you matters here. You can get The Horn in a wide variety of ways. The easiest thing is simply to go to headonradionetwork.com and click the Listen Live button there. But we've also got a link to the stream at whiteRoseSociety.org. And you can also check us out on TuneIn Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, and Stitcher Radio. The podcasts are at iTunes Radio. Where to begin? Well, I just got in the door. About 30 minutes ago. It's a long drive back from D.C., especially when it seems that the heavens have opened up and the rain is coming down sideways because the earth has been tilted. That wasn't rain I was in. That was just, I don't know, that was just a jug being poured out. Might have been nice, I'm sure there are lots of places in this country that would like to have had the rain we got on us on the, we got on us, I got on me on the way home. Might have done some good a few months ago. Not so much now. Of course, that's what happens when you screw up the climate with things like poisons and hydrocarbons and coal and oil, and gas, and just generally make a wreck of things. You can expect this sort of thing. I hope you got to listen. The Horn streamed all the speeches of from Fighting Bob Fest, starting in the morning this past Saturday and going all the way through to evening. There was an amazing array of folks, people like Jim Hightower and folks like Greg Palast and Mike Papantonio and Bill McKibben. Bill's amazing because he somehow manages to take very, very grim news and make you able to listen to it without wanting to just say screw it. Bill McKibben and 350.org make you want to do something about it to try to save us before we go past the point of no return. And it's an open question as to whether we will or will not do something, but I'd say the odds right now are favoring the polluters and the poisoners. But we do what we can, to try to change that. And there's a little bit of change here and a little bit of change there. And hopefully, maybe if America continues to insist on screwing things up, maybe it'll be the rest of the world that sees the light. So many other countries already have. Now, I started the program by saying, well, howdy, victims. I am not going to spend the evening talking about what has been talked about on just about every political or progressive program, and even most of the right-wing ones. Of course, those are in the way of apologetics, since the news broke that Bishop Willard Romney was caught speaking his truth when he thought no one was listening that really mattered, you know, that those 47% of us who are going to vote for Obama because we're victims. By the way, I should also say that during the trip, it's always a joy when I get to meet more folks who have shared time listening and participating in the Horn. On Thursday, I got to meet our friend Harry, who came down just to say hello in D.C. And then on Saturday, I got to meet Jenny and I got to meet Aaron, both of whom regularly chime in on my Facebook page and who listen to the program. It was wonderful. Jenny is a painter, and she brought me some of her artwork, a piece of her artwork, that will hang here in the studio as a reminder of what is worth saving in Wisconsin, because, of course, they're under assault there. And lo and behold, they're under assault by a guy from West Virginia who has tired. Well, I mean, he's not tired. He's just expanding from blowing up mountains in West Virginia and Appalachia generally. His name's Chris Klein, and he is expanding into the notion of trying to blow up the lower hills of northern Wisconsin. Disgusting, really. He's got a great big honking yacht, like a 127-foot motor yacht, that he rents out to the 1%. The name of that yacht is called Mine Games. Mine Games. Yes, really. It's just a game. The community's ruined. The stream's filled in. The poison's wafting down onto neighborhoods and families and hollers and the poisons that go into the water. It's all just a game to these 1% thugs. It's just a game. It's a mine game, you see. And he's got his set sight on ruining some pristine and magnificent property in northern Wisconsin because they've got a mineral in them called taconite. Thugs is thugs. But I started the program by saying howdy, victims, because, you know, that's what Bishop Willard Romney says we all think we are, victims. Well, I'm here to say, I don't know about you, but I'm no victim. I'm a host, and I don't mean a radio host. I'll explain what I mean. I'm a host. You're a host. That 47% that Willard Romney, Bishop Willard Romney, feels so much disdain for, we're all hosts. And this is something that came to me in the course of my travels. Sometimes it's good for me to get out from out my own back door once in a while, because your mind expands at the same rate as one's horizon does. And we've spent a lot of time, and more than just I, just me, not sure which, really tired. And more than y'all, more than we, have described Bishop Willard Romney's tenure at Bain and the attending philosophy as being predatory, as in predatory capitalism. And I got to thinking about it. And I thought about what a predator is. I thought about the multi-thousands of years old urges that compel a great white shark through the waters, constantly in search of his or her next meal. The jagged teeth that go row upon row upon row back inside that that mouth that the eons have evolved for one purpose and one purpose only. And the way they glide through the water. I thought about the wolf. And the very, very close-knit social community that wolves make for themselves as they hunt in the forests for the things that will be their prey. And how the wolf is deemed sacred among some native cultures. And of course, I thought about the big cats. I thought about the magnificent lion lying under the shade of a lonesome tree on the savannah, mostly grooming himself and, you know, doing that thing that if human males could do it, we'd never leave the house. While the female lions are out on the savannah, prowling, stalking, chasing down the food that will eventually nourish the entire pride. I thought about lions. And if you've got a house cat, even a house cat is a little predator. You ever seen the dedication and determination that a house cat will bring to bear if something like a moth? I mean, we say, oh, look, kitty's playing with a moth. No, kitty's trying to kill the moth. A cobra is a predator. Sliding silently along until it runs up against something for dinner. And the poor mouse or whatever creature caught in its gaze that can't look away and yet knows it's on the way out. Predators are predators because that's the way they evolved. Prey are prey because that's the way they evolved. Some island cultures where And of course, white people caught on to it and became like a very cool thing to do, wear shark's teeth around their necks. There's a long list of predators that I'm sure I've missed. And predation is not necessarily a pretty thing to look at, but it's real and it has its purpose. And I am not aware of any predator that ever preys upon more than it can consume in any given time in its life. Ants aren't predators. They hoard up food for the coming winter. Locusts land on things and eat everything in sight because that's how they have to operate. One might call them pests. One might call them nuisances. But I thought about Willard Romney, who thinks of all of us as victims, or thinks we think we're victims. And I couldn't help wondering if maybe there isn't just a little bit of Freudian stuff. No, Doc, I got this. We think, he says, of ourselves, the bishop does, as victims. Now, that is an old, old trope inside right-wing so-called conservative Republican politics. It's called the victim culture. And they, every time somebody who's been maimed by a corporation files a lawsuit, well, that's because we've got a litigious victim culture in America. No, it's because we have a judicial system that is set up to, at least theoretically, afford some sort of justice for people who have been civilly wronged. But no, I think Bishop Willard Romney knows that we're not victims. I think by the very nature of what he did at Bain Capital, he knows what we really are. But I don't know if he knows that at least some of us know what he is. Because what we are, and I say this sincerely, what we are, are hosts. Because the host is the living thing upon which a parasite feeds. And ever since that hit me, it has been running through my mind, and I couldn't wait to tell you that I'd had this metaphorical epiphany. How would this work out as an analogy? Romney is to American working people as what? An Anopheles mosquito is to a human being. Romney is to American working people as a tick is to a person walking through the forest. Willard Romney is a parasite. He has done nothing with all the years that have been afforded him, given him, depending on your worldview and your theology. He has done nothing except to feed off of the lives of other people. Other people who did not willingly invite him to sup off of them or with them. Willard Romney is the amoeba in amoebic dysentery. Willard Romney is the Anopheles mosquito. Willard Romney is the tsetse fly. Willard Romney is the hookworm. Willard Romney is a tick, a blood-sucking creature that, having drunk its fill, falls off until it has digested it all, and then moves on to suck the blood out of something else and refatten. And they also breed prodigiously. How about that? I wonder if there's enough in us to help spread that metaphor. That Bishop Willard Romney, that we've figured him out, that he is a parasite. That he is a tick sucking away at the life of American people. Now, he may be the first tick ever to have bank accounts in Switzerland and the Cayman Islands, but that could simply be evolutionary. I imagine if we, as is often the case in zoology and entomology and biology, that if you go looking around, you'll find more ticks that have bank accounts in the Swiss, in Swiss banks, in Switzerland, and in the Cayman Islands. Ticks. He's a tick. And he's not even halfway fun, like that short-lived comic program animation thing, the tick. You know, the superhero, the tick. No. He's a tick. Isn't that exactly what he and Bain did to all those people whose companies they consumed sucked the life out of, and then left to die? That's not predator behavior. That's parasite behavior. Having used up one host, the predator drops off and goes in search of another. He's a tick. Bishop Willard the Tick Romney. And it's not just because I'm sitting around trying to think of something mean to call this soulless thing that's running for president. This robot with clever human skin. It's because one imagines that in the predatory world, understand the communication from the earliest days of being a lamb. The mommies, the ewes, keep the lambs close to them because they understand that they live in a predatory world. They also understand that their best chance is if they stay together with the rest of the flock. It's always the lone gazelle that gets picked off from the herd, or the weak one. But a tick? A parasite? No. You know, the best thing you can do with parasites is to stay away from their breeding grounds. You don't let water stand near where you live because mosquitoes breed in that. If you go for a walk in the woods, you give yourself a good going over when you come back. It's not like trying to be aware of a predator. It is much more a matter of taking the precautions to keep a parasite from making a host out of you. And I guess that's what November is, isn't it? We will find out in November whether the American people have enough savvy and sense to keep from becoming, as we have become before, the hosts to parasites who happen to dress very well and move in all the right circles. Email coming in from Ron in Raleigh. How about this? He says, Bishop Romney is the face sucker from the alien movie that lays its egg in the body of the victim, more destructive than a tick, just like the bishop. Getting the idea. Every dollar Bishop Willard Romney has ever made has been because he sucked on someone else. He didn't prey on them. He just latched on and started sucking the life out of them. In light of his comments, which have been, like I said, I'm sure, discussed at length on all the progressive programs starting yesterday, I don't know what other conclusions were reached. And I don't see a lot of purpose in digging into it more, at least on my end. If you want to, I think we certainly can discuss it, because you're liable to have insights that I don't have. And that's the benefit to Conversation Radio. But there's that and so much more. As I was leaving, of course, all the misery of the inflammation of the so-called Arab world was breaking out. And I'm cursed. Every time I step away from the microphone, one of those big stories breaks. And it engendered in me a desire to have some kind of a discussion down the road about free speech, because I happen to be on the road all day listening to the radio, and there in the AKHQ we watch some news, and so, yeah. What are the limits of free speech? That's the wrong question. Because you are not free to yell fire in a crowded theater. You are not free to incite people to violence when you reasonably know or should know that what you're doing will so incite people to violence. And that's the discussion we should be having. I heard commentators saying, don't blame the YouTube. Don't blame the guy with the millions of dollars of investment from Israelis who got into a sick and twisted relationship with some Christian fundamentalist to produce that goofy film that they then lied to the cast members about. No, don't discuss that. Discuss how crazy those Muslims are. I'm sure I don't have to remind you, but if there were any weird little lurkers out there, right-wingers and stuff, it might bear reminding them. But a sculptor a few years back who had created a big chocolate Jesus with chocolate Jesus parts that were actually visible, and I suppose edible, had to run and hide when a bunch of rabid Roman Catholics, inflamed by that sick freak Bill Donahue, threatened his life. But it's the Muslims who are crazy, right? Yeah. Around here in these parts, and I don't know, maybe you get it in the city too, but out in the country, every now and then, and we even gauge winters by where they are. If they're hanging low, it's going to be a mild winter. If they're way up in the trees, it might be a bruiser. Hornet's nest, you know, the big ones. And every now and then, some dummy will see the hornet's nest and say, you know what I want to do? I'm going to get me a sharp stick, and I'm going to knock the hell out of that hornet's nest. Well, what do you want to do that for? I want to see what the hornets do. And that's when, if you're lucky, you get to pull the idiot aside and say, for several thousand years now, human beings have known that when you whack hornet's nests with a big sharp stick, the hornets come out and look to defend themselves and inflict some pain on whoever has the sharp stick in their hand. And anybody who happens to be nearby. So being evolved creatures with functioning brains, let's not whack the hornet's nest with the sharp stick. And the smart person goes inside, knowing that oftentimes good advice goes for naught. And a little bit later, you'll hear squeals and squalls from outside of somebody hollering, help me! Help me! Help me! Yeah, what's the matter, Cletus? I whacked that hornet's nest with a sharp stick, and there's hornets everywhere, and they're stinging the hell out of me! Well, Cletus, that's what hornets do. And before anybody gets upset and says that I'm comparing the Muslim world to insects, I'm not. This is the kind of thing, I mean, you know, the Bible's full of parables and Aesop's fables and, yeah, all of that stuff. And the reason I'm putting it in these terms is because the question of incitement goes to whether or not the person who did the inciting could reasonably foresee that a hornet's nest whacked with a sharp stick would result in hornets getting very angry and indiscriminately stinging people. But we get this, right? I know that, you know, there's that famous famous correspondence between Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. when he could get his nose off the mirror. He liked his cocaine, Justice Holmes did. And the great Native American jurist, Learned Hand, who probably should have wound up on the Supreme Court, but never did. And Learned Hand said, the remedy to bad speech is not to quell the bad speech, but to encourage good speech so that the bad speech will be beaten, defeated in the marketplace of ideas, which is great in theory. But when you've got people like the folks who made this movie, I think the surest remedy is to get them, invite them aboard the helicopter or the airplane, fly them across the ocean, put them on board a helicopter, and set down in the middle of Benghazi, Libya, and enjoy your tour and fly away. If Terry Jones wants to burn a Quran, he needs to burn it in Libya. Because doing it anywhere else is chicken shit. It's just gutless. It's just cowardice. I don't believe in book burning. But if he wants to do it, he really ought to go where it'll mean something. Because, you know, there's a good 20% of us in America who, if you, whether you were burning the Quran, the Bible, the Rig Veda, or the JCPenney catalog, would really see no real difference. It's all odious because it's all book burning. Email coming in from Michael. He says, Bob, I agree wholeheartedly with your analogy. Let me try out another one with you. Bishop W.W. Mitt Romney is a cancer. And I think Michael came up with this, and this deserves to be mentioned. You know, his name is Willard Mitt Romney. Why aren't we just calling him W? Because you can't tell a dime's worth of difference from him unless you're down to the underpants between him and George W. Bush. Why isn't he being called W, the Republican nominee? But anyway, Michael says, let me try out another one on you. Bishop W.W. Mitt Romney is a cancer. I mean, growing is good, right? Whether it's cellular or monetarily. I'd like to see my bank account grow a bit. I'd like to see my personal wealth grow. I'd like to see the Horns bank account grow, too. But when a cell in a body or a personal fortune in a society grows so fast, so uncontrollably, that it starts destroying everything around it, that is a cancer. And Bishop Willard Romney is a cancer. I think that's fair. I also think it's cross-pollinatable to the GOP. You know, they want all this unrestrained growth. Remember, it was W, the original W, not this W, the original W who, upon being appointed president in late 2000 and taking office on January 20th, 2001, said, the economy's too hot. We're going to have a tax cut to slow it down a little bit. And then a couple of weeks later said, the economy's slowing down. We're going to have a tax cut to speed it up some. And lo, he was all things to all Republicans, I guess. Marty asking, was it P.T. Barnum who said something like, nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people? I don't know if it was P.T. Barnum, but somebody said that, and it's darn sure true. Oh, that's cute, Irish Dave. So did Obama whack a wasp nest? By the way, Irish Dave asks, can one yell Mohammed in a crowded theater? I wouldn't. Marty also noting, not to mention the rabidity following an artistic display of a Jesus on the cross in a bucket or a glass of urine or the reaction to Martin Scorsese's The Last Temptation of Christ. Oh, they go nuts! But of course, this all falls probably under the broad general heading of religion's crazy. It's unhealthy. It asks you to, you know. But I kind of wanted to get that off my chest. I also have a recommendation for you. The Friday night, and by the way, many thanks for the effort made to bring me out to Fighting Bob Fest. I couldn't have done that on my own. The plane trip was picked up by dear friends that I don't know if would approve of me telling who they were. And thanks to the Fighting Bob Fest for putting me up once I got there. Great people out there. Lily and Sam, and especially and Norm, and especially the guy who put Fighting Bob Fest together in the first place, Ed Garvey. That was the 12th one of those, you know. The 12th one. Thousands of people. Just really amazing. We'll go forward into the rest of the program. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. A bunch of different ways to get into the queue. They all come into the same phone device, so no number gets priority. How you doesn't get your priority one way or the other, so you just line up and have at it. It's been a while since we talked. So with that in mind, I would say it would be a good idea to go ahead and ring in now so that we're not trying to wedge in a conversation with the last 2 minutes of the program remaining. And with that in mind, let's do go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Good afternoon, Brother Albert.
What a glorious goddess she is.
She is. Great. She's a very good goddess.
Oh, what a good goddess. Oh.
The goddess of irony.
Oh, she just... Oh, that mask just keeps just disintegrating. It's just amazing.
I love the explanation, though. I didn't say anything there. I haven't said it. I say the same thing all the time. But this was beautiful. I want to lift people up into the privilege of wealth. Did you notice that? Did you hear that quote, Albert? Because I did, and I couldn't help picking that word privilege out of there, because that says volumes all by itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a lot there that is just... Well, we all knew it anyway. You know, it's just a lot of it reaffirming, you know. Yeah, we know that. We know all that. Thank you, Mother. Thank you, Goddess. Ah, oh, my goodness. It's a ceaseless torrent. And, you know.
No let up till November, one way or the other.
Yeah.
And if it gets really fun, we may not have any let up until, January the 20th, 2017. If America fails this IQ test and fails to comb through its hair on the way, you know, back in out of the woods and make sure no more ticks get on us.
I don't know.
Is there anybody that finds a tick to be elegant or merit-worthy or respectable?
No. No, I actually, that's the one... I can find a reason for all sorts of animals, flies and all kinds of disgusting critters. But
I saw a great T-shirt for sale on a website. I forget where I was browsing, but it said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." .. And spiders. Spiders are elegant.
Yeah, I mean, I like spiders.
The world of nature is magnificent, and then you get to the parasites, and they're just gross.
Yeah. Some of them are useful, though. I mean, some, like the one that replaces the fish's tongue. You know, that's a useful parasite. I shouldn't say useful parasite, but one that says, hey, I'm going to move in here, and I'll help you out.
Yeah, well, you know, that's because evolution's been at work, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, we have also the examples of the symbiotic relationships in nature, which I think is an inspiration and something we should strive to try to...
The remora... That sucker fish that gets on the shark and cleans his scales and
even the feeder. It's like, you know, it's almost like a Pixar. Sometimes you're watching these documentaries on, you know, the coral reef. It's like a Pixar thing where it's like, oh, we have the cleaning station over here, and the big 500-pound grouper with the big teeth comes lumbering up with the big lips and the giant mouth. And the fish comes swimming in and out of its gills, and it's letting them do it. It's picking them parasites off, and, you know, we got to let these animals get their niche. I guess that's a good reason for parasites. I just don't like ticks.
But that's symbiosis. That's not parasitism.
Yeah, true. I mean, that's what I mean.
I mean, it's like the bird that sits on the rhinoceros's horn.
Yeah. Like, well, that's what ticks are. You know, ticks, we are kind of muddling up the system, you know, because we don't like, hey, we need birds come pick us. I let little finches come and swim and pick ticks off my head, you know what I mean? Come just kind of hang out and sit on my shoulder and croon me while they eat ticks. I hate ticks. God, ooh, creepy crawlies, heebie-jeebies.
Oh, we've got, here, Albert, we've got a bunch of dogs that run around loose. And they're not, you know, they're not hateful dogs. They're just dogs that their owners don't take proper care of. They just let them run loose, and they'll run up in the yard. Hey, boy, how you doing? You go to scratching behind your ear, and there's this knob there that's about the size of your thumbnail, and you go, oh, it's a tick.
It's a big, giant purple corn kernel.
Yeah, see, we're ruining dinner now.
Yeah, sorry. All right, enough. No more. Well, we're talking Republicans. How can we not talk parasites?
Right.
Was there? I mean, you know, like, look at that room. Look at that. You know, I think one of the things that really struck me was Mitt Romney was talking and telling a story about how he went and bought a fucking sweatshop.
Yeah.
And then he buys the argument. He bought a sweatshop. Why is there barbed wire out there? Oh, that's to keep them out so they don't come in and work.
Meanwhile, I'm driving over to D.C. on, what was it, Wednesday, and I hear the story of the fires in the factories in Pakistan. Did you hear about these?
Oh, what happened now?
Well, you know, you don't want the proles going out the window with those high dollar polo shirts and stuff.
Oh,
so they put bars and grating on all the windows, and then you don't want them going up to the roof because, you know, there might be a secret helicopter waiting to spirit away all those goods, all that profit. So the door to the roof was locked too. So when the factory caught fire, they just all burned up to death. And they were, you know, a little, you know, they were just in there in the burning building and using their cell phones and modern technology to call home and say goodbye. And, well, you know, it's good for capitalism.
Well, it's also compost for a union movement in these countries. You know, it's we didn't really get that until we had a triangle fire, did we?
Right.
You know, we had these incidents in America, and, you know, if it was up to Mitt Romney and the crew, we still would. And, you know, I just, you know, and of course, you know, Mitt Romney's over there talking about how, you know, he pioneered outsourcing. That's what, to me, is one of the most damning things in that whole thing. He pioneered outsourcing. What? Yeah, 47%. Yeah. Of course, his disdain. Of course, his, you know, Thurman Munson the friggin' third, whatever the hell he is, you know. Yeah, he pioneered outsourcing in the 90s. He's the one. He's one of them.
He's the father. He's, like, he's the father.
Yeah, I mean, come on now. You know, I mean,
he's a Harkonnen. Come on, we know that.
He's a Harkonnen. Yeah, he's a, definitely. He's a, what's his name? Fade.
No, he's not Fade.
Yeah, he's too, yeah.
No, he's the Beast Raban.
I thought that was Chaney.
No, no, Chaney is Baron Vladimir.
Baron, yeah. Well, there's
my delicious Baron, you're so elegantly hateful.
You know how interchangeable they are. Yeah, they, it's like magic underwear. Yeah, they just slip them on and off. And he's, you know, but he pioneered outsourcing. He pioneered the hemorrhaging. He pioneered the telephone centers and sweatshops and all that stuff. You know, I'd like to hear what Abramoff knows about him.
Oh, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think I would. And, you know, I'd like to hear whatever workings he had with Delay and Micronesia, you know. I'm sure that there's something involved there. You know, he's already, you know, I'm sure you saw Keith Olbermann's little...
Yeah, see, I did it. Yeah, you just laugh, just like he did.
Yeah, because you have to, you know, and that's all true, you know, and I'm not, you know, but it's funny how, you know, Mitt Romney can be in bed with a Roman-style orgy thrower and, you know, with the purification, whatever they call that, the vomitorium and everything, and he is, yeah, he likes money. I like money, though, and that's what he likes. He likes money, right? What didn't his wife say he likes sports more than religion or some nonsense like that? So, I mean, I don't know about his religion. It just shows his utter hypocrisy once again. It just, you know, speaking of religion, I'm telling you, I've been seeing this this movie clip for The Master. I mean, you got Joe Quinn Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman in the same
movie. Oh, yeah.
Are you kidding me? I mean, come on. This is 2012. Oh, man, this is great. That's going to be a good one. And they're, you know, I don't know how they're going to skewer that. Are they skewering Elrond, or are they just telling the truth? Or, you know, it looks kind of like they would be telling a couple of little truths there, but because it's a period piece, some people won't get it. And, you know, I don't know, Philip Seymour better get some bodyguards. Because, you know, them Scientologists would be out there looking through his windows. And
yeah.
Yeah, they're a group. Well, that's what happens when Mormons evolve, right? You know, and then he's talking about Mexico, where his parents fled, so they could be have sister.
Oh yeah, that. That's, see, all the press is being spent on the 47% line.
Yeah.
But that line about if I looked like a Mexican, I'd probably be having a lot easier time of it. Now, why are the for-profit media not beating that one into the ground?
I think we still have. I mean, here's the thing: the only way they will, if it starts to slow down, they'll keep analyzing it. I think there's a lot in here that, you know, it's just such a torrent, and I think the 47% just hit the right line, you know, so it, you know, it allowed them to disseminate this because, you know, 47%, huh, you know, so you're trying to tell me that someone who makes $20,000, $25,000, that money that they pay in their payroll tax that they get back at the end of the year is better off in the government bond market, not collecting any interest for them, than it would be in their pocket. But you need, you know, if you make $100 million, you need all, you know, 98 of it, or you just can't survive. I mean, the disparity, the guy thinks middle class is $250,000 a year, Brother Bob.
Well, that's that.
I mean, he has no comprehension of, you know, he's just taking a squat on all kinds of people that people don't want to be on social services, you dummy. You know, people don't want that. You know, why don't you go talk to your other donors, the Waltons, and how they, you know, manipulate, you know, employee hours and, you know, teach them how to enroll into social services to supplement what the corporation, the 38 hours a week they work, 38.9 hours a week, and then all the overtime that they don't get paid for. Oh, you're off the clock now. No, we don't want.
Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you realize it or not, but we've got a new money thug in the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, another winner. This guy's, I mean, this guy's a real beauty. What's his name here? He's promised a bunch of millions of dollars to get rid of that one in our White House.
But that's why they want to hide behind these.
Yeah, here he is. You know, we were talking about ticks and stuff, right? Here's another guy who just... She's a good goddess. She's a very good goddess. She has such a sense of humor. Now, this goober has said that he's willing to spend $12 billion to buy elections for Republicans. He's the founder of what went on to become the online brokerage TD Ameritrade. He's planning on spending $10 million to support Bishop Willard the Tick Romney. Planning on spending $2 million to help other pig-lickins that are running for Congress. The ads start airing very soon. And he's just doing it all by himself. What's his name? Brother Albert, his name. Thank you. Goddess. His name is Joe Ricketts. I expect that another billionaire Romney supporter will show up next name, I don't know, Paul Scurvy. Then we'll get Egbert Elephantiasis.
Oh, and Frank Guinea Worm. Oh, my God.
Right. Well, this is apparent. Yeah, we've apparently engendered a conversation here. Our buddy Randy just said we ought to start calling him Citizen Kane Romney. Marty wants to know who the Padishah Emperor Shaddam the Fourth is in our little scenario.
Okay, good one.
Yeah, and we have to. Yeah.
Newton Gayroy, Newton Leroy Gingrich.
No, I don't know. Maybe Dick Cheney, seeing how he's got somebody else's heart in his chest. Nah, he's got to stay Vladimir Harkonnen.
I don't think the that house has risen yet. House, what is it? Core? What are they? What are they? The Quartons or whatever? Ah, sorry.
Oh, the Landsrad?
No, the Landsrad's the collection of houses. I gotta stop because I can't. It's just tongue tying me. I can read it in my head, but I can't say it.
Yeah, but I don't know. Shaddam the Fourth will reveal himself. Maybe it's Sheldon Adelson. Maybe it's Joe Ricketts. Many machines on X.
Yeah, I don't think we're that. Yeah, I don't know if we're not to the emperor stage yet. We'll get there. And the Harkonnens, it's going to be 25,000 years of this crap. You know, so buckle in and, you know, just let them keep hanging on that rope, though. Because, you know, we have the goddess assisting us on every turn, and she has great patience.
Oh, indeed. And I have to tell you that Ron in Raleigh has just sent us a sound clip to enjoy during our conversations. As soon as the little sucker loads, we'll play it.
I saw a buddy of mine posted, breaking news, Republicans meeting to, you know, to replace Mitt Romney with Jeffrey, what is that? Oh, man, what is his name? I can't, I just brain farting all the time. Bukowski, Jeffrey Bukowski, remember him?
Yeah.
The bums always lose, Bukowski. The bums always lose. Yeah. Big Lebowski's kids.
Right. Yeah.
Man, yeah, I feel bad for them in a way. I have pity for them, but I'm not going to piss them out or anything. I'm just going to let them keep burning. I'm not even going to gloat. We're just going to say, well, this is what, you know, the mask, it's going to get worse. It has to. I mean, and I know every day something else could, what else could they do now? You'll see. It'll be a recipe for, you know, for minority fetuses or something. It's going to be a pound cake recipe that calls for just something just so, it's going to be so, you can't even be able to imagine it. That's just the horrors that these people keep painting. It's a relentless, ceaseless, I mean, who's next? Who's next? The billionaire baroness, the baroness of coal energy out there from in Australia.
Yeah.
That's the baroness.
Yeah, and you know what? She really looks like a member of the Harkonnen family. By the way, Ron and Raleigh just sent this, like I say, just sent this along, so let's see what kind of a treat Ron has set up for us. Come on.
There is a Harkonnen among you. There is a Harkonnen among you.
Yeah. There's a Harkonnen among you.
Yeah, there is.
I think there's a bunch of them.
There is a bunch of them, man. They just, you know, they're like... I mean, I wish they were more recyclers, you know, like cockroaches. Cockroaches are useful, you know, like we were talking about. But they're just ticks. They're parasites. They're not even useful ticks. And they, you know, they're just the mites that...
Well, you know, you've got to be open to some things just in your world. There where our AIC headquarters are in D.C., Albert, there's a little, you know, flower bed, and there's some hedges and stuff right out front. And then there's there's this tree that had these weird pods on them, and I'd never seen them before. And, you know, I cracked a couple of them open once they dried, and they got these little hard black seeds that actually bounce when you drop them on pavement. And I thought, I'll be damned. But I was too lazy to go and look it up. And then the other day, while I was walking into the building, yesterday, as a matter of fact, I saw all these weird bugs with these red abdomens and these black shoulder pads.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really gross. That's mostly the human response to bugs.
Yeah, I think those are like distinct kind of box elder bugs.
No, that's what I thought they were. That's what I thought they were too. But there was no box elder anywhere around.
Yeah.
There was just this one tree with the weird hanging pods. and these were really red, and they were apparently mating. And, you know, we've used the word, maybe even on this program, cluster... Right?
Oh, those are the Calabian cluster mites.
No, I saw these things, and they were all clustered together, and they were all having bug sex.
Yeah.
And they were joined at the tails, and the great big bug would be walking around, and the little bitty bug would be walking backwards, saying, you know, honey, please don't pull out my... You know, I don't want to die yet. And they were all, and then they were all together in a cluster, and it was just kind of. And it turns out they are golden rain tree bugs. Close kin, probably, to the box elder bug. But they were, you know, the box elder bug's kind of orangish, but these were really, really bright red. And, you know, because they're true bugs, they don't have a larval stage. They just go from nymph to adult. And there are all kinds of nymphs running around. You know, look at mommy and daddy. They're so funny when they do this. What happens to daddy after that happens?
I can't wait.
Wait a minute. Am I? Oh, dear. Oh, mommy's eating daddy. Now they're bugs, so they don't prey on each other. But it was fascinating to see that cluster of, and because I suddenly realized the real meaning of it. And it was just another one of those little things that, well, you know, I'm glad I've been on the planet, because now I've seen the golden rain tree bugs cluster.
Yeah, I still want to find one of those garden snake. I always wanted to find one of those little nests of gardener snakes.
Yeah, the little green snakes.
Yeah, black and green stripes. They nest over. They hibernate in the winter and then come out in the spring. And there's thousands and thousands of them. That was my own little thing as a kid, but. I mean, are they native?
I mean, the tree itself came from Asia, but wherever you've got the tree, you get the bugs.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a twofer.
It's
just like if you get Republicans, you get economic terrorism. You just do.
Yep. Oh, and environmental terrorism. And, you know, back to this, you know, we didn't really talk about the whole Libya thing, you and I, anyway. You know, but, I mean, I think it's kind of apparent to what happened in Libya itself. It looked like a strike, right? And we saw some, you know, Libyan people coming out and saying, you know, actually more Libyan people coming out saying, sorry, this is not, you know, something that, you know, it represents our values or interests, you know, da-da-da-da-da. But then you have, you know, and I think they're paying almost hyper-attention to what happened in Egypt and around, you know, the land, you know, around the rest of the region. I don't think, you know, I've seen some, you know, long, you know, wide-angled lenses of these protests. There's 500 people there. You know, and yeah, sure, that's a bunch, but, you know, I think, you know, this was a right-wing movie designed to, you know, instigate a bunch of crap, you know, with people who don't have anything other than you were using the insect analogy earlier, like, a wasp's nest. And it kind of is, and all they, you know, the reason the wasps come out and defend them because that nest is all they have. You know, they don't have 17 houses with car elevators and, you know, hummingbird tongue frappes and all this other crap.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
They don't have this luxury, you know, that they have, and not only that, the University of Tennessee teaching these, you know, that region jihad in the 80s. Let's not ever forget who started this fire, you know, who started this fire over there is, you know, I mean, there was a little this, little bit of that, but not until we started teaching them jihad and getting those Wahhabists another tool, or the Saudi princes, which we used to remember that, you know. And then poor Obama shows a sign of Asian respect by, you know, bowing, and oh my God,
he's on an apology tour. He's apologizing for America.
Yeah, I mean, Brother Bob, these people don't even know they don't know decimal points. They don't know custom. They don't know anything. They don't know history. They don't know nothing. They are know-nothings with their feet way above the earth. Their brains are in the deep freeze of space. They can't comprehend. Of course, it's not going to bother half of them, but it's just going to discourage them. You know, I don't know.
And they're simple. And they're simpletons into the bargain too, Brother Albert, because you'll know. You remember when Dim Leader said, "They hate us for our freedoms." Well, lo and behold, poor little Joe Scarborough, Flissutus, poor little Joe Scarborough took to the air on Monday with nodding bobblehead Mika beside him, and Scarborough's only purpose in being alive on Monday was to declare that Muslims hate us because of their religion. Which I guess in turn teaches them to hate us for our freedoms.
Yeah.
What's the purpose in such simplistic bull, Brother Albert? What is it? Can you tell me?
Exactly. It's low and common denominator garbage. It's, you know, and if anything, it's pouring gas on the fire of simpletons. You know, it's just red meat with dog whistles. It's, you know, and that's the thing is, you know, even in these protesters, even though it's still, you know, you know, where is it? It's in the illiterate Afghan areas in Pakistan, and you know, Egypt.
Yeah, it's where people who have yeah, nothing but their religion to serve as a salve to their otherwise oppressed lives. I mean, by the way, you mentioned the word dog whistle, and we will come back around to this. You know how these conversations work. I got to share this with you because it just landed on my head. Well, see, that's what happens when you start working with bug analogies. Things land on your head. Get it out! Yesterday, I was walking past the Newseum, which is the Museum of News in D.C., and they have the front pages from a whole bunch of newspapers. And I mean, I read the front page of the Johnson City, Tennessee, Bugle Call of Freedom and Moral Volcano, and you know, all of that stuff. And then I came to the Charleston Gazette, the state paper for West Virginia. And I thought, oh look, by Jove, our little newspaper in Charleston's hit the big time. We're on the billboards outside the Newseum.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a story there, Brother Albert, about the political ads that are running in the governor's race here in West Virginia. Stan. And it was talking about the fact that the Republican Governors Association and other Repiglicans are running ads that don't even mention our theoretically incumbent governor, Earl Ray Tomlin, who loves him some mountaintop removal and loves him some poison water and just loves him some poison children and cancers and heart disease. Because this is the same clown who said, when he was told about the birth defect study, "Well, I every day coming along telling you something else makes you sick. What are you going to do?" So, but they're kind of desperate. They're running this guy named Bill Maloney against him, And the Republican governor's latest ad says the following, and I quote, "Obama promised our children change, but that change has darkened." No, really. I mean, I stood there kind of, yeah, because I don't know. I think my blood sugar was running a little bit low, and I think maybe I need a cracker. Did that really say?
Yeah.
No, really. But that change has darkened. You know, if newspapers came with soundtracks, I'm sure that would have jungle drums beating behind it. It's darkened.
It's inserting a bone in its nose. It's sharpening its teeth with a file.
God almighty.
It is unbelievable. It's just relentless. And it is, but it's such a desperation. It really, you know, in the current Republic of Wisconsin, Stan, you know, I was just out and about, and I didn't see a single Romney sign. Saw a whole bunch of Obama signs, though. Not a single Romney sign. Not one.
You know, it's almost like the for-profit media are getting nervous, Brother Albert. Driving back in, I don't have the opportunity very often, but I was driving back in, and I was last listening to National Petroleum Radio, and their the All Things Edition or Morning Considered or whatever the hell it was. And lo and behold, they wanted to talk about the Willard tape, and they wanted to bring in a pundit to talk about it. So guess who they went to, Brother Albert? You're going to love this. You'll never guess in a million years unless you heard it. I mean, we need somebody with real expertise to talk about why Bishop Willard Romney would think the way he thinks and behave the way he behaves. So,
David Brooks.
Huh?
David Brooks.
No. No, because David Brooks wrote a column today.
Oh, yeah.
Saying that it was pretty damn dumb.
Yeah, well, he's doing whatever he can to stay in that magic middle.
So instead, what we got was they introduced the segment by playing Flush Flemball. Really, they played a clip of Flush Flemball on NPR's evening news program. And then they, others are defending Bishop Romney. Of course, they didn't say Bishop. Yeah, others, that's the Fox style manual at work in the world. And then they introduced, as an expert to explain what really was going on, Jonah Goldberg.
Oh, see, Goddess is just... It's all right, though, because I believe she cuts the other way better.
Yeah, that side of the blade was a little dull this afternoon.
Yeah, it's... Well, you know... I think the writing's on the wall, and a lot of Repig Lickin' commentators and talking bobbleheads, you know, they've said it. You know, when Romney gets crushed, it's going to be bad for their party, and their party is going to fragment. You know, they have popularized this hard right so much that it's now a sizable portion of their base. I mean, not to say, you know, which is a percentage of the United States. It's 25%. They're the 25%ers. And they've been feeding them red meat, laden with all these antibiotics to facts. You know, they have the antibodies to facts. You can't show them a fact. And the contrarianism is, you know, to 11. Everything that, you know, they're loud, they're ignorant, they're just everything terrible. And they are proud and revel in it. And now they're out there. They're, you know, I mean, heck, even the government's preparing zombie, they're doing drills for zombies. I mean, you know, they're out there. They're a reality now. That's right, we're coming for you. We're going to put you in FEMA camps. Get them real scared. Maybe they'll, like, have a short out and turn to dust or something. But anyway, I'm being wishful, but we got to deal with them. And that's what's going to happen. Now you're going to have, you know, you're going to have probably more moderate Joe Scarborough Republicans that want to go back to their values of being Republicanism but not being, you know, ignorant, and then you're going to have the far right wing, and then you'll have the Democratic Party. And I don't know, you know, I think the media likes to play their game, and they like the comfort of the, you know, of the tripod, and that's what they...
Well, I think they're reading the polls that matter, not the national polls that say, oh my God, it's a horse race, 47-47 with 2% undecided. I don't know. Yeah, 3% undecided.
Rasmussen, maybe.
Yeah. No, it was... No, I think they're worried about that, and they're trying, you know, as this particular segment showed rather obviously, they're trying to keep the horse race alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, just... I don't know, just flog old Rafalka around the bell, you know, around the bell lap, and, you know, see if she can just keep stumbling. Yeah, get close to the other horse.
Well, David Gregory and MC Rove, they're pretty tight.
They are. Jesus God, he makes me crazy. Oh, by the way, yeah, we just ruined it for Andy.
Sorry, Andy.
Yeah, and he said, Jonah Goldberg, I just vomited.
Yeah.
I mean, really, he is such a pathetic... I mean, you know what? I'm taking... You know, we've got this complex phone system here in the studio. I'm taking it into the bedroom with me somehow or another when the show's over. Because when Jonah Goldberg is getting calls from NPR, I figure they're going to be on to me any minute.
I don't get much more partisan than
he, and I like to think I'm a little more likable than he.
Yeah. No, you're not in the same... No. No, 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 no. Bob, come on. How many lies have you told over the years? You know, when you talk from your heart. When Goldberg talks, he talks from his wallet in the GOP talking point dictionary. You know, you're going to call Democrats, and that's the, you know, that's the thing about us, is we'll call our side on our side, and, you know, and you call it like it is. I mean, you know, you're not like Jonah Goldberg. No. I mean, you know, in terms of maybe national notoriety, I sure wish more and more people knew who you were, and I think more and more people are starting to know who you are, but you're not a Jonah Goldberg. Come on, buddy. No, 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 no. Don't sell yourself that short. That guy, it's too easy to be that. He's the easiest thing in the world. Remember, they had that 14-year-old kid they were going to sit there and they're grooming? They're desperate for it. There's so much money over there. I mean, Bob, you know, start talking like a right winger and they'll have you. Man, that's what we need you to do. You can be our special agent. Going deep, Bob.
Yeah, right.
Get your Limbaugh impersonation up and, you know, get some of that WorldNet Daily money.
I like money.
But you like looking at yourself in the mirror too. So you see, that's the thing. You have a conscience. You can't do that kind of stuff. And you're not. No, that kid is. You remember him during the Bush years, justifying torture. When have you justified torture? When have you justified the bombing of all those 1.5 million civilians and their deaths? When did you justify, you know, war for weapons of mass destruction? Come on. You don't peddle fear. When you're telling us things that scare us, it's because it's the freaking truth. It's not, you know, and I know it's comforting to think, oh, we've got the facts on our side. Well, it's something to do with science, you know. It's a scientific method. It doesn't just have to apply to scientists. You could apply it to everything, right? You know, that's science is a way of viewing the world.
It's a way of learning things.
It's a way of learning things and figuring out of... things are real or not, and you know, we source as much as we can, and I think we just have a good instinct too. You have instincts that can see, you know, we see the bullshit. The goddess blesses us with this, you know, with our third eye squeegee every now and then, so we can just see it. And now more and more everyone else is getting the squeegee. The little gnomes are running around squeegeeing, and it's just becoming, the mask is off, and Goldberg is one of them. He's still got his mask on though. But did you see Gary Bauer? Oh, he is aged into Skeletor. Have you seen
him? No, I haven't.
Holy cow. It's been 10 years. That's right, 92, yeah, 10, or whatever it is. Yeah, it's been 10, 20 years. He looks like my goodness. He was at the conservative policy, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, the Values Voter Summit that Willard's wife, the Ann Real Marriage Romney, went and talked to.
Then
didn't Ryan go talk to him too?
Oh, in person. Oh yeah. And he's sad. What a sad sack he is. Nobody
And that's the problem, is they have so much riding on him, and that's why they added him to Romney. Ryan, you know, with his Ayn Randianisms and his going galt all the time, you know, that's not a really cohesive ideology, and we've kind of tried all, you know, some of us don't forget that, you know, Mr. Greenspan was licking Mistress Anne's boots on all
fours. No, we don't forget.
Yeah, we don't forget that, and, you know, and I still, and what
please,
I
Please, Ms. Rand, may I suck it, though?
You know, what we don't forget about him is I remember Alan Greenspan admitting his ideology was wrong.
Yeah.
He said that.
Yeah, well, we missed it. We missed that one. Didn't see it coming.
Yeah,
that's because Daffy Duck was, you know, he didn't see the guy with the scimitar because Daffy Duck was busy diving through the gold coins in the cave. I'm rich. I'm rich. I'm comfortably well off. I'm socially secure. Mother. You know, mother.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, and they overheat the economy. I mean, you know, this is the other thing. We got studies coming out showing how tax cuts have always damaged the economy. You know, we have a lot. I mean, heck, I'm seeing a lot of FDR quotes floating around, and they're just dead on. One of the quotes I just recently read was where he said, we have to stop acting like government is this alien force that overpowers us. It is us. This is, every time I hear about these people cracking off about the government, I just show them the Declaration of Independence, you know, because they've gone to this land where the Constitution is these Ten Commandments written in stone or something. And the only thing written in there is, you know, the right to bear arms. You know, they don't care about any of the rest of them. The rest of them were all eroded, but, you know,
speaking of carved in stone, Brother Albert, you know that Fat Tony Scalia is mad at us, right?
Yeah. He's mad at everyone, isn't he?
He says that, he's not just mad, he's enraged. He said, you have a Democratic Party which has been trying for years to appoint people who approve of Roe v. Wade, which means people who are not originalists, who do not stick to the text. Did I miss it? Where is it in the text that it's, well, oh, okay, maybe it's in that part that defines who citizens are, you know, that didn't at the time of the origin of the Constitution include women. Is that it? Is that what he's saying? Is this sort of...
Yeah. And that's the other thing with this whole... Who wrote it? Well, we know who wrote it. We know what their intent was, and they intended it to be adaptable over time, right? Well, I think Thomas Jefferson, it's in his monument, you know, where he wrote his letter to, you know, doesn't think that law should just be changed willy-nilly, but as scientific advancements and technologies, why should we adhere to the barbarisms of, you know, 1770s and the 1800s? What is that, you know? I mean, the founding fathers, you know, right to bear arms, the founding fathers knew about rail guns. I mean, they knew about atomic weapons. What are you talking about? I could have any...
Now, the telegraph, for Christ's sakes.
There was no telegraph when they wrote the Constitution.
Ben Franklin was still wandering around. Look, guys, I got that shocked out of me, but this stuff's going to be big.
It's huge. I mean, this is what I mean. I don't even know if they discovered whales yet. I mean, maybe barely. It's just, who the hell do you people think you are? Who are you kidding, Tony? Shut up, Tony. Shut up. But you sold me to... Thank you, Tony. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, and I got to toss this out there for your consideration as well, Albert. I just had a note in from our buddy Mark. And he was talking about what Paul Ryan makes him think about. And he said this, and you want to talk about something that just give you the just absolutely the shivers, little hairs standing up on the back of your neck. I see Paul Ryan in Oswald. Think about it. Yeah, there's a similarity between those two. They look similar. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is that just... Yeah.
I have a lead grease painting of what he puts in my mind, and it's Handmaid's Tale, and I just can't. Nothing supersedes that. When I look at Paul Ryan, when I look at the line of reasoning that these people that he represents follows, it's Handmaid's Tale. Oswald. Lee Harvey, what are you talking about, Oswald?
Lee Harvey. Yeah, he looks like him.
That pinched up little face, that hateful little mouth.
Rat. Yeah, he's a little. He's just a. It's the Republic of Gilead. It's such a present issue. I mean, you know, image to my mind when I think of these guys. I mean, and if you haven't read the book or seen the movie, please at least go read the Cliff Notes. I mean, the parallels are, it's scary. It's crazy. That's what Scalia, that's what all these guys are pining for. They want that. They want that authoritarian, religious Republic of Gilead with a, you know, the big strong father, daddy figure authority. I mean, you know, of course, big brothers and, you know, all that other stuff, but they want that Republic of Gilead, women subjected, you know, government within the womb, state licensed prostitution houses, you know, which is, you know, right? That's what happens, isn't it? That's what happens now, right? What was that? The madam, right? David Bitter and all those guys, right? He didn't just go to the D.C. madam. He was going to all of them. And they all do, right? All those strip clubs are all happy. Oh, yeah, Republicans are coming. Republicans are better than Democrats.
Yeah, but you know what? They're crappy tippers.
Well, yeah, but, yeah. Oh, and then you get it.
I know. See what it does?
Yeah, they're mind wipers. They really are.
It's disturbing in the extreme, and of course, it's no good for me to. Travel is wearisome, tiresome, that kind of thing. But what's really dangerous is that it happens. It's habitual with me. Every time I'm driving up, and every time I'm driving back, I get bored. Listening to the same old crappy music with new and even crappier commercials. So sooner or later, I will go wandering over to the AM band, Brother Albert.
You're a sadist. Oh, no,
masochist. Masochist. Yeah, remember. Yeah, what happened when the sadist and the masochist got married. The masochist said, hurt me, and the sadist said, no. Sorry.
I don't listen to that.
I went over there, and I caught Southwest Bible Radio.
Oh, God.
I don't know. I'm tempted to save that story for tomorrow, but my God, I don't know.
Secret Muslims. Secret Muslim drinking beer.
Muslims?
He don't really drink a beer. It's not real beer.
No.
He don't eat. That bacon isn't real bacon. It's that tofu bacon. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, not yeah. Yeah, those aren't pork weenies. Those are not dogs.
Yeah. Oh God, it's so desperate. It's so pathetic. It's just unbelievable. As I said, there's not a single Romney sign. Not one. Not one.
You know what? I didn't get to see a lot of Madison, but I didn't see any there either.
No, Madison's pretty liberal. It's like a little Midwest San Francisco in a way. But that's just because they have that university.
Well, yeah, you know what the analogy was that was given to me? Madison was explained to me by saying, see, what we are, we're as cool as Austin, Texas, but the winters keep everybody from coming up here. My God, Albert, what a beautiful town it is. What a gorgeous town. I got to take a little tour by cab up through the town, and we went up onto the college campus and saw Bascom Hill and the seated statue of Lincoln, and looped around by the lake and saw the sailboats sitting there pulled up on the... it was all happening at sunset, and there were all of these people in red shirts streaming into Camp Randall Stadium. It was pretty magic. And then I saw the state, and the state capitol is just freaking beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And you know, all the roads point to it, so it comes real. It's like, wow.
No, I could get fond of that place real quick. And you know what? I've even been convinced now, you and folks like Bruce and Aaron, who came to Fighting Bob, and Jenny and everybody. You know, y'all said, I say the same thing every time. This place is great, but I got to see it in February. Mm-hmm. And every one of you had said, nah, you'd get used to the winter in no time. You learn how to deal with it.
Yep, brandy. Brandy and a sweater.
Brandy and a sweater.
Brandy, sweater, some cheese curds. You know, that's how the Eskimos do it. They eat a lot of, you know.
I got to tell you, I was even brought a cheese curd care package.
Oh, excellent.
So I pull into the driveway this evening, Brother Albert. Mm-hmm. And Agnes comes and gives me a kiss, welcome home, and I stopped at the store and got some groceries and stuff. Mm-hmm. And Margie comes and, Daddy, I'm so glad you're home.
On you?
You know where we're going. So Ferd comes up to me, and I reach out for a hug, and he just kind of reaches past into the car and goes, got any cheese curds? And I said, well, it just so happens. And he goes, I figure you ate the lemon pepper ones, but just tell me there's some Cajun ones down there. And I said, well, ye, and I didn't get all the way to yes before he had taken the bag out of my hands, reached in, pulled out the Cajun ones, and said, yes, there are. And I said, you saved me some.
Squeak, 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 squeak.
Oh, they are. They're very squeaky.
Yeah, and, I got some good news myself. I've come up with my 20% that I need.
Oh.
And so there's no stopping us now. Other than, you know, I don't know, if Willard pulls it out, I might have to, I don't know, do flee or something.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't know. What are we going to do? What will we do? I don't even know what the hell. What are we going to do? Republic of Gilead. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you gird up thy loins or something. I mean, it's just... I got an idea of maybe kind of where your philosophy is going with your business plan and everything, because when I got there on Friday, I had not eaten all day, and not eating all day is not good for proto-diabetics like me.
No.
And so, you know, long about 9 o'clock, we'd eaten a little bit earlier, but I was still like, and so... I called for some, I asked at the desk, and I said, you know, what's the good delivery pie? And she said, well, you know, there's Papa John's. And I said, no, I said the good delivery pie. Oh, you want glass nickel pizza?
No.
They deliver. It was a respectable pie. It wasn't Papa John's and it wasn't Domino's. This was local stuff by, you know, they deliver in green cars and they did everything, you know. So, you know, it was decent pie.
They actually, Madison, there's a couple of guys who, they, you know, there's some real foodies over there. And you know, I don't know if I know you don't drink the coffee, but, like, if you, you know, you probably saw them. They were at the Fighting Bob Fest, the Just Coffee Co-op.
Yeah, I saw that.
Those guys are awesome. But, you know, like they do all fair trade, all that kind of stuff. And honestly, I've had coffee from all kinds of different, you know, I've had it from Hawaii and Jamaica and everywhere. You know, not them, not roasted by them. They're the best roasters I personally have ever had. They are just, I mean, if you want a good cup of coffee, justcoffeecoop.com. They're based out of Madison, Wisconsin. Unbelievable. I don't know what it is about their coffee. They just, the way their roaster does it, it's a air roaster, so it's not, you know, burning it, but it's toasting it, and all the different temperatures that they can really fine tune it to, and it just unbelievable. Berries and nuts, you know, you'll taste all those notes. Very good coffee. And there's also, I forget what it's called, I haven't been there yet, but I've read some reviews in some of the eating magazines, you know, the foodie magazines that come around. But they have a Neapolitan, you know, they don't deliver, but it's a Neapolitan joint. And I have the magazine upstairs, but I can find it for you and tell you next time you come. Next time you come, I'll have mine, so you can just come to me.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's my plan. That's my plan. By the way, the UW graduate Michael is saying under the subject line, Madison, making me jealous. It's a magic little place. It really, really is.
Little city. Really.
I mean, even the short time I was there, I was able to realize this is special.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of the pink flamingos down Bascom Hill every spring. And it's, mm-hmm. I assume they're still doing that. That's just gorgeous.
I don't know. Yeah, I could see myself from every time I've been there. I could see myself fitting in quite easily.
Oh, I don't think it would take much more than about a half a day.
Yeah.
If that.
It's, yeah, well, maybe, you know, we gotta send. I'd like to send my girls to school, and I'd like to send them there. You know, it's, you know, because I want them to be scientists and doctors. But that's just.
Well, that looks like a great place to become one.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good school. You know, they do some good things, and they have some, you know, interesting, you know, research that goes on there, and you know, it's like, I'll tell you another thing though. Because it's for some reason we're talking medicine, it's making me think of the health insurance companies. Can we kill these health insurance companies already?
Yeah, not the people, just the companies.
No, not just the company. Well, they are companies are people, my friends.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm still stuck in the 20th century.
Can we, for real, like just vape? There's no purpose to them other than increasing costs. For example, as you know, Renee's pregnant, right? So we have insurance in this house, and we pay, you know, it's a sizable chunk of our income. It's one of them other, you know, it's the other tax. You know, Mitt Romney can have, you know, 4-star health care, and it's couch cushion money. I mean, this is what falls on the elevator, you know, the car
yeah.
elevator, you know, one of them. You know, it doesn't cost nothing for him. I mean, well, geez, his car elevator could pay for my family's health insurance for 20 years. In just one of them, in one of his palaces. But you know, we pay a sizable amount, and you know, when a woman's pregnant, they like to run tests and do this and do that. So we go to our sonograph, right, whatever that is. Why am I paying insurance if I'm getting a bill for $1,000?
Ouch!
What am I paying insurance for? I mean, I can go to a boutique.
Well, I know where you live. It's not like you're surrounded by arsonists. It's not like you're in tornado country. I haven't heard of any hurricanes blowing in off of Lake Superior lately.
And did insurance cover anything? I'm so confused. All I know is we pay thousands and thousands of dollars a year. Then we got, you know, a $500 deductible, because who needs to come up with $4,000 if all four people get sick and need to go to the hospital? You know, $2,000 is a little easier to come up with, I think. You know, maybe we should go for the, I don't know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I don't know. So we pay more a month to have I don't even understand, and then $1,000. It would cost $75 to go to one of those boutique in the stores to go do, you know, because they have them where you can just, you know, go get your 3D sonograph or whatever. Sonogram, I don't even know what it's called. I'm talking sonogram. It's probably from the 70s. What do they call them now? You know what I'm saying?
No, I think it's still a sonogram.
It's sonogram? Okay, good. You know, it's like, that's $75. The blood work to have together, it was $550. You know, and I'm sitting here with my wife. There's this little midwife place. It's actually a house in the neighborhood in the little town that we're in. And they have the upstairs. It's basically a birthing center. It's awesome. It just really is. It's a comfortable place. It's going to be a great place to bring my son into the world. It's way better than a hospital. And these people care about, you know, it's the midwife thing. So it's far cheaper. I mean, you know, I don't even want to talk about how much money the twins were. I can't even, I mean, I could have a friggin' Tesla for how much that was. I mean, you know.
And we know you want one.
Oh, I want, oh God, Bob, 0 to 60, 3.9 seconds. 3.9. That's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but what? But it ain't going to have the rumble of a 55 Chevy. I mean, come on.
It's so fast you can't hear it. That's what it is. It's breaking the sound barrier. Forget it. That's rumble my foot. I want to sit back in your seat. Oh, your eyes start. Oh, you start looking like a Russian cosmonaut.
Yeah, you look like the old Max L commercial. You know, hair blowing back and skin a little taut against the cheekbone.
Yeah, Right. Seating for seven, performance, no car seats seven and has that kind of level. But anyway, you know, let's not get too much into it. But I want to know why the blood test that, you know, we're sitting here talking to the, you know, via the insurance company is $550. We're talking to the midwife, they pay eight. $8, not $800. $8, not $80. $8 for the blood test. Why is it $550? What the f-
That's because capitalism is the greatest economic engine that has ever been gifted to the world by Jesus.
Yeah, right. Bull. I mean, I can.
I know.
I'm stuttering because, I mean, I just want to curse my head off. And it's breaking up my flow. That's the problem. I curse too much. I can't even. It makes no sense. So every time you hear me stutter and stir, just put an F bomb or MF or whatever, because that's what I'm saying, really. You got to be kidding me. How do you do this? How does this even? How do you think this is a sustainable system? I'm paying all this money for insurance. We pay this every month, every month, every month, every month. You know, that comes out of the money for food and bills and this and gas and all these other things, you know, where people that in our economic group that everyone on the horn most more than likely is in, we're all on the edge. We're all on the edge here. And then we got these health insurance companies just consuming ticks. Speaking of ticks.
There you go.
I mean, come on now. These guys are the damn things from Wrath of Khan in our goddamn heads.
Yep.
The
ticks run with other ticks. You never see a tick just hanging out for cocktails with, you know, something, you know, a useful member of the insect world. No.
Yeah. They latch on and then start.
You don't see ticks next to honeybees. Honeybees are nice little animals.
Yep.
No, the ticks hang with ticks.
Yep. Yeah, and they give live birth once they latch on. I mean, $500 for an $8 blood test? What? How do you sleep at night? And then you get a $1.5 billion retirement package as an health insurance company executive when you're at $1.5 billion cap. That's capital. Now that's cannibalism. That is cannibalism. In every way, shape, or form.
That
Back up.
That is parasitism.
Yeah. Oh, it's...
Ain't no symbiosis. It ain't doing any good for you.
No.
That markup.
It's not even... Yeah, it's not even a wise parasite. A wise parasite allows, maybe even extends, the lifespan of its host. So it lives longer and is able to reproduce longer. You know, it's these real primitive parasites which make the cricket jump into the water so its larva can hatch out of it. You know, they're the short term. They're the Ebola. You know, they're not a wise pathogen. It's not like the common cold, which you can kind of respect because it's been with us for, you know, millions of years. You know, it's the Ebola, which burns out real quick. Oh, it's scary, but it just burns out. And that's the problem. It's avarice. And avarice is the cancer of civilization, and it always has been. And apathy is the friggin' heart disease, you know. And I hope that, you know, Democrats and liberal-minded people and so-called independents will get up and vote for the only one we can vote for. I mean, there ain't no way. I mean, what do you think Romney's going to do? I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, we all know Obama gave a hand job to the insurance companies and a reach around. And he barely got there, and we're a little bit better off than we were before. I mean, at least, you know, flying spaghetti monster, forbid if my kid comes out and needs heart surgery or needs this or needs that or, you know, any of these kind of things that can happen, at least they'll still have health insurance and won't be kicked off the roll. At least there won't be no pre-existing conditions and my children can stay until the 26th. It is better. It's still not ice cream and, you know, Willy Wonka's little candy land there, but it's better than what we had. I think it's like with the windmills for the Republicans in Iowa, it's a little bit of progress, and progress has a way of changing people's minds for the better. I mean, you know, that's why even nobody's who buys their privatization nonsense on Social Security, and that's what they're peddling. Who buys trickle down economics? Who buys that? It's a failure.
The people who it benefits.
What exactly? And who are they? They're the ones that with their boats with the Cayman Island flag and the, you know, the sex orgies, you know, the hedge funds and I don't know. I hope this is the election where money fails. Let's defeat money. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. Money, money, money. It's a fake system. We all need it. I understand it, but it's still a damn game. It's a stupid game that does nothing in terms of, you know, you can't take it with you. It doesn't, you know, come with you. It doesn't make you, it's not like the spice which extends life. I guess it does, actually. I'm talking out my ass here. It does extend life because then you can afford insurance and, you know, you probably also, you know, Mitt Romney don't.
Well, you can afford horses for your MS therapy.
Yeah, exactly. No lifetime.
And write the horse off, and the board and care for the horse.
And barn.
Yeah, because, you know, Willard Romney says he's going to close the loopholes, Albert, but I'll bet you that write off the horse for the MS therapy ain't going to get loophole isn't going to get closed.
How can he close the loopholes? If Sheldon Adelson has given him whatever how much he's given him, you know, which we all know is what he's going to get a return with Ryan, the Romney-Ryan tax policies, he's going to get, for his corporation, $2.9 billion more. I mean, he's $2.9 billion. Then he can pass on.
Why wouldn't you throw $100 million into that?
Yeah, especially if you're going to be able to give your kids $7.9 billion in inheritance. I mean, not that, you know, the estate tax is fine by me. You know, I think that's fair. It's, you know, I don't see oak trees sitting in forests soaking up all the resources and then launching off into space. That's just not how it should work. You know, they should break down, you know, fungus breaks them down and it feeds the rest of the forest. It just is, and then of course now that they're gone, the sunlight can come down and others can take its place. It's so fundamental in terms of just inherent to nature that this is anti-nature. You know, they always talk Obama's the anti-Christ. These are the anti-everything. These are the anti-decency.
Well, they're anti-nature because nature operates according to rules of biology and evolution, and they reject that entirely. So yeah, let's at least understand. I tell you what, Brother Albert, this has been a magnificent the return home conversation. I'm glad you were the first blinking light I hit. I tell you, we've been all over the place, and it's been a delightful trip.
Well, let's keep going on. We'll talk later.
All right, take care, Brother Albert.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Sage of Southwest Wisconsin. I didn't get to see him this time through, but at some point we will. That's Brother Albert. Quick trip to the mailbag. Just heard in from our buddy Philip. Bishop to pawns. Queen to queens level 3. There's our Star Trek reference. Bishop to pawns. When Bishop Willard denounces 47% of the American public for their sense of entitlement and false sense of victimhood, isn't he lamenting that he and his ilk are victims because they are the alleged wealth producers and job creators and have to support the 47% through onerous taxes and the machinations of an overly large government? Frankly, as the son of a wealthy Mexican immigrant, Willard benefited from the Nightmare Act, which afforded him opportunities that far surpassed the privileges and benefits of working people whose parents were born in this country. As a beneficiary from the Act, he also regards himself as inherently superior to immigrants who actually work for a living rather than benefit from invested wealth and want a Dream Act for their children out of fairness and equity. By the way, you did notice the declaration that none of the health care reforms will attach or be applicable to the Dream Act children. Oh, no, if they get sick, let them die. Yeah, because, you know, in an election year to say that you were going to actually help children with darker skin not get sick and die, well, the American people won't stand for such as that. But Philip continues, he said, then again, I don't remember anyone challenging his father to produce his birth certificate when he was a leading Republican candidate for the presidency in 1968 prior to his admission that he had been brainwashed about the Vietnam War. Clearly, says Philip, brainwashing is a genetic issue in the Romney family, but I must admit I appreciate Willard's candor and lack of discretion. Most presidential candidates, other than Pat Buchanan, who should have campaigned in his native Prussian dialect, articulate a desire to unite Americans if they are elected. Willard has been unusually candid in admitting he is writing 47% of us off because we're lazy, whining ne'er-do-wells who don't deserve his superior leadership. Finally, we have unvarnished honesty from a Republican in a political campaign. If I didn't know better, I'd think that Willard is weary of campaigning for a job which will impose a huge loss of income and far too much work on him, but being too proud and obtuse to quit the race, has decided to sabotage his own campaign by alienating European allies and the American public. Maybe he wants to return to the private sector to... Wait, let me back up there. Yes, he's alienated a bunch of our European allies. He's alienated a bunch of the American public. But do please remember he has not alienated his old business partner, Benjamin Netanyahu, who is paying back, pressed down and shaken together, in that regard by the stink that he started raising as of, like, what, yesterday? Or Sunday before last? Or, yeah, this past Sunday is what I mean. With all his business about, we've got to have a red line declaration from Barack Obama. Because now Israel's saying that we've got to go bomb Iran. You know, oh, we're poor little Israel. We don't have the technology to bomb them real good like y'all can. All right? So, just mentioning. But Philip says, maybe Willard wants to return to the private sector to resume exporting jobs and destroying businesses while avoiding paying sufficient taxes through creative accounting. I also imagine that his wife is weary of an intrusive press that wants to pry into such private personal affairs as her spouse's opinion on relevant political issues and their tax returns to examine the creative accounting that allowed him to pay a lesser percentage of taxes than most of us. No doubt, she wants to resume the simple life of a house's wife. That's house's wife. Just guessing, says Philip. Be honest, horn listeners. Don't you appreciate that Willard's untreatable case of foot-and-mouth disease erases any nostalgia for the wit and humor of Sarah Palin? I know I do. As for Joe Scarborough, the question is still open whether his aide died in 2001 from hitting her head on a desk while trying to avoid a Scarborough affair, parsley, sage, and thyme notwithstanding. That's good. Republicans may be notoriously stingy when it comes to social programs, but when it comes to political campaigns, they truly are the gift that keeps on giving. And he adds, Philip does, with regard to Fat Tony Scalia, I have to admit that Scalia, Alito, and Thomas have made me an ardent supporter of postnatal abortion. As for Mr. Ryan, were I walking down the street and encountered him wearing a raincoat, I would avert my eyes and run away for fear of his opening it. Even if he were dressed underneath, I would find the exposure disgusting. Frankly, Paul Ryan enjoys philosophical pornography and has no qualms about admitting... Have you ever read the sex scenes in Atlas Shrugged? Oh, don't. Paul Ryan enjoys philosophical pornography and has no qualms about admitting his vice to anyone who will listen. Philip is in rare form tonight. Unfortunately for him, there are fewer and fewer listening. I know that most Republican candidates rejected climate change and evolution, but I've been surprised that, in addition, they so publicly reject the tenets of political science. Philip concludes, your opening monologue was right on point. They are the colon cancers of the body politic. Jim noting, Romney's charm counter-charms the 47%, reveals the monster under the mask. The mask is off. The mask is off, as Brother Albert noted. So we've got one on hold, and if you want to fill up the rest of the lines for the final hour of the program, you are more than welcome to do so. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. That's how you get through the program. Email works too, Bob Kincaid, as you can see. BobKincaid@gmail.com. By the way, Andy wrote in a little bit ago, before I made him physically ill by mentioning Jonah Goldberg on NPR. Andy noted, Mittens the Bishop Romney suffers from Stockholm Syndrome. He's reflecting the feelings of all the thousands of workers he threw to the curb. He's the victim. He's the one maligned. He's the one who had his livelihood taken away, the food taken off the table, destined for his wife and kids. You're 100%, Andy says, 100% correct. The man's a parasitic bloodsucker, destroying working people's lives across the globe. He's the victim, this damned SOB. There is no empathy, no feeling, nothing for his fellow citizens. This is the Romney-Darwinian kingdom. All that matters is that he gets his. Ethics and morals are meaningless. And mentioning it for the first time this evening, they want it all. Andy says, truer words were never spoken. Albert's comment, the health insurers are parasites. There's no need for us to be paying so much for insurance. No need. 18% of our gross domestic product while leaving 50 million uninsured citizens. A marriage made in heaven. Mitt Raw money and the health insurers. They will both suck the blood from our veins. Andy says, I was just given a quote for a prescription my doctor wants me to take. $478 out of pocket for a monthly dosage, and I won't be getting better. Just to maintain normality. And see, if you were to go into Canada or Mexico, that $478 out of pocket might be, what? $8 out of pocket? Yeah. So we will take a little bit break and come back to your calls and light them up, the lines, the phone lines, that is, if you wish. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Beside a singing mountain stream, where the willow grew, where the silver leaf of maple sparkled in the morning dew, I braided twigs of willow, made a string of buckeye beads. But flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need. Flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need. I leaned against the bark of birch, and I breathed the honeydew. I saw a northbound flock of geese against a sky of baby blue. Beside the lily pads, I carved a whistle from a reed. Mother Nature's quite a lady, but you're the one I need. Flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need. A cardinal sang just for me, and I thanked him for the song. Then the sun went slowly down the west, and I had to move along. These were some of the things on which my mind and spirit feed. But flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need. Flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need. So when the day was ended, I was still not satisfied, for I knew everything I touched would wither and would die. And love is all that will remain and grow from all these seed. Mother Nature's quite a lady, but you're the one I need. Flesh and blood needs flesh and blood, and you're the one I need.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. Means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 18, 2012.
Japan announces it will phase out all nuclear power, sort of. While U.S. nuclear whistleblower warns of new risks. Shell gives up on Arctic drilling for now. Plus, it's official. August 2012 was hot. Really hot.
Tell us something we didn't know. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We will never have the elite smart people on our side.
Now, I wonder why that would be, Rick Santorum. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, Rick Santorum thinks the smart people will never be on the Republican side.
Yeah, I wonder why he thinks
why
that.
Why would that be?
Maybe it's got something to do with the anti-science, anti-logic, anti-education, anti-everything positions that Rick Santorum and his friends seem to hold.
Yes, that smart people obviously can see right through. Anyway, what do you have for us today, smart person Desi?
Well, it's official. August 2012 was the fourth hottest August on record for the entire globe. Again, that's the fourth hottest since record keeping began in the 1880s. And this past August was the 36th August in a row where the average global temperature has been above the average for all of the 20th century. So this August was the fourth hottest August for the world and the third hottest August for the United States. Now, just in the U.S., each of the last 15 months have seen above-average temperatures, and that's for the first time in 117 years of record-keeping. And the Arctic is warming faster than the rest of the planet. Now, we've been following the melting of the polar ice cap that has carved a new daily record every single day this summer. The previous record all-time low, set back in 2007, was broken over 2 weeks ago. And any minute now, we'll get the official final tally of just how much ice was lost this summer. Right now, it's estimated to be the size of Texas.
And what does it matter if we lose ice?
Well, it's funny you should ask. Several new studies tie the loss of Arctic sea ice to harsher winters and wetter summers in Europe and the UK. As the ice melts, the ocean water absorbs more sunlight, and that warm water in turn pumps more heat into the atmosphere, as Dr. Adam Scaife of the UK's Weather Service tells the BBC.
That has an important effect on the jet stream and the storm track that impinges on Europe and can change the weather on seasonal timescales.
That slowing down of the jet stream he described is also changing weather patterns in the U.S. More slow-moving storms bringing rain or snow that will stall and dump even more precipitation. Heat waves can stall as well, like the prolonged heat dome that caused this summer's record heat wave and record drought across the U.S. But the Arctic remains a harsh environment. Royal Dutch Shell announced on Monday it is halting its Arctic offshore drilling adventure for now and will try again next year. After major setbacks with their equipment, Shell ran into even more problems once they got to the Arctic, like a 30-mile-long ice floe that wanted the exact spot held by Shell's drilling platform.
Was there drilling up there, which I know the U.S. Coast Guard was against because they said, we can't help you out in a spill. We have no resources up there.
Right.
But was the drilling affected by the melting ice in the Arctic and the additional ice floes that are now floating around up there?
Oh, indeed. It is very dangerous to get slammed into by a gigantic iceberg, as the Titanic found out. Well, what happened this time is Shell says its crucial piece of required oil spill emergency equipment, a containment dome, was actually damaged during its final test. So now it has to leave, pack up, and try again next year.
So before they even started, they have already failed.
Yes.
Nice going, Shell.
Weekly anti-nuclear protests in Japan have pushed the Japanese government to announce it will phase out all nuclear power plants in the country by 2040 and will focus on renewable energy and natural gas. Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda says,
"We are at last standing at a brand new start line.
But critics have slammed the new policy because though it supposedly phases out nukes by 2040, it phases in a restart of all of Japan's 50 nuclear reactors that were shut down after the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant disaster last year. And it allows for a possible extension of nuclear power through 2060.
Lots of loopholes.
Yep. Here in the U.S., a whistleblower at the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission is accusing regulators of covering up the risk of flooding to nuclear power plants located downstream from large dams and reservoirs. In an internal letter obtained by the Huffington Post, an engineer within the NRC says the NRC is withholding from the public that a handful of U.S. nuclear facilities are at great risk of catastrophic flooding if dams or reservoirs should break, which the NRC's own reports show could cause a Fukushima-style full-station blackout, knocking out reactor cooling systems and backup systems as well.
What could possibly go wrong? For more on all of those stories, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download us anytime via iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio, follow us 24/7 on the Twitters, and find the Green News Report and like us on the Facebook. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yes, indeedy. 1 minute past the hour, the final hour of this Titanic Tuesday edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And going right back to the phones in a minute. I left someone out, and I wanted to make sure that I did not, because this just touched my heart in so many ways. You may remember a while back I told you about, and then later on we talked about it at greater length, that county, the richest county in America, Loudoun County, Virginia, that wanted to close down its museum, wanted to shut down its history, wanted to scatter its history to the four winds. Over a $60,000 budget. Yeah, a county with a budget of $10 billion. Was it billion? Million? Something. $10 million, maybe. I can't conceptualize billion. A lot of money. Well, Thursday evening at the memorial for our dear friend and departed colleague, Larry Gibson, Birch Cello Wren, that's her handle on Twitter, was there, and she presented me with a lovely book, The Lure of Loudoun, Centuries of Change in Virginia's Emerald County. And there was a lovely card that she, it was wrapped in a lovely gold ribbon with a card. And when I started reading it, because, well, I couldn't resist, I opened it and I saw this. To Bob, friend and champion of many good and decent things. And tears came to my eyes. Coming to my eyes now. I want to hang on to this book and protect it and take care of it. I'd like to think maybe it'll go down the generations, and maybe someday some little kid will be thumbing through some dusty books and say, Mama, tell me who was Bob. Just like we've done the same with inscriptions in old books here. I meet wonderful people when I get to go out and out into the world and meet the Horn family. Truly I do. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, thanks for describing your feelings. It's your buddy Mark in Larry Gibson I would have had a lot in common with, maybe not the courage that he has. But I appreciate your candor, and I agree with Albert. We are people that are honest to each other, to ourselves, probably first, most importantly. And subsequently, when you're honest to yourself, you're honest to all people who are honest to themselves for appropriate reasons. There's a lot of talking about Jesus, talking at Jesus. And then there's people who do the right thing that helps the values of Jesus, I suppose. I don't know anything about Jesus professionally, but I want to say that I've never mentioned Sandra or Albert by name or Jim, maybe I did as a fellow veteran, or the gentleman from Ohio. There are a lot of people that call the show that might recognize my voice, and I just love listening to all of you normal Americans who are the last two people that wrote into your show, Bob, by email, they were so eloquent. So
Andy and Philip, yes.
Andy and Philip, Jesus Christ, you would think that they wrote each other's emails. they confused me because...
There's a commonality of thought that runs through all of this, and it's a beautiful thing because there's some serious thinking going on around here.
I knew for sure that it wasn't, but I mean, I was like, Jesus Christ, are these guys sitting in the same hot room writing a continuation of the other guy's humanity to me? I'm at a loss for words, but I call your show just to hear your voice and let you listen to mine, but I,
Well, it's not my show, it's our show.
Well, we support you, and it is our show at the courage of your show and your life and your family's life and your friends' lives. So we respect your courage, and we follow your heart. And the thing, Bob, I wanted to say was that just a quick political comment about the fact that you know, when you come to the power of over 300 million Americans, even though you count 47% of 100 million voters, there's 310 million Americans. It takes a lot of guts to stand up and want to be a dog catcher if you listen to your show or do anything that has any kind of real courage and real care of helping anybody. It takes courage. It takes integrity probably first. If you want to be honest in life and put yourself to the side, my gosh, that takes a lot. So, you know, it's showing that I wouldn't give 2 seconds to pay attention to Bob, but obviously he is... I don't know what to say. Have the Christians or the Catholics set the Mormons up to fail, to shut them up temporarily for another 10 or 20 years like the nuclear power plants in Fukushima or in Japan that will be given an extended license? You know, all of our plants, the 103 reactors, it's funny. My life is in and out. I've guarded United States embassies under the hand of President Carter primarily, and then as stupid-ass FBI snitch Ronald Reagan becomes president, I unfortunately caught the tail end of his, and I saw the people that came in. I went, what happened to the folks that I used to work for President Carter? They were so nice and so smart and so civilized, and now I work in the nuclear business, and it's only because I'm a carpenter who wanted a pension or a person that wants something at the end of the road, if I'm lucky enough, like my buddies say, to die with your first pension check in your pocket, you know. Nobody wants nothing for something, but it's funny. You know, Japan's got 50 reactors. The United States has 103. We're building two in Augusta, Georgia, which is actually about 20 miles away from Augusta, and and two in Oconee, South Carolina, probably being built by white males from Oklahoma and Mexican males from Mexico, non-union, and southern white males from Georgia and the southeast building them in Vogtle. I know that plant won't have any issues. And if you look at the old reactors, unfortunately, in the Carolinas, they lead the industry with issues. They've always cut corners and had a lot of lack of professionalism. I'm not necessarily for any kind of dam power. I know that we're trending away from coal, unfortunately, into fracking. I know that includes the taking down of Congressman Wiener. I know that they have a lot of corporate spies that keep a lot of information on J. Edgar Hoover type total information awareness on people that they can take human beings down, to include myself or yourself. That's why I've recommended to yourself or people like Amy Goodman or real heroes, the Martin Luther Kings of our society, to be careful what we say out of our hearts to each other. But don't become antiseptic, but become a little bit military-minded, because we are on a chessboard for our next move. And be careful of the things that we say, even though the actual information is very easy to get, but we must make them work for it. I listened to the Bob Fest, because I listened to your show, Bob, and I appreciate that. And
there were some amazing speakers there, and a lot of brilliant ideas put forth. The breakout sessions, which I wasn't able to broadcast, were especially fascinating. I can't wait till the next one.
Well, it sounded like just a guy off the streets listening to the civility of my fellow Americans. I've always gone with my heart as a child. I was lucky, Bob, to grow up in a house where Dan Getz to Henry Mancini to the John Philip Sousa to Chet Atkins to the gentleman you had on earlier, Johnny Cash. I grew up in Abraham Lincoln's hometown, the son of a person who grew up in government housing, a white guy who hated no one, who was, looked like, my father looked like Herb Alpert, a very handsome young guy, very progressive, didn't have a father, and I was given triple the father as a child. So I knew that somehow inherently I became quite a good artist and person on a stage and athlete, and I had I wasn't loaded with real high level talent, but I had a little bit of everything, and I also had some personality that a lot of the rich kids that I went to school with liked and envied. But a lot of the boys that I grew up with, Bob, envied the relationship I had with my father. I had one of those dads who coached baseball and was also the head of the Umpires League, who a lot of kids wanted their dad to be the dad that they saw that I had, and I never exploited that. I was given a job to do, and I became a an all-city pitcher. And actually, my catcher was the number two pitcher, and he actually got drafted by the Seattle Mariners and then played for the San Diego Padres for a little bit, and then became Southern Illinois University's baseball coach through skills, talent.
At Carbondale, right?
In Carbondale, Bob. And he just died of throat cancer. His name is Daniel Callahan. What a he had a master's degree. I'm a blue-collar kid that just stuck with my blue-collar ethics and values, but I was able to run with people like yourself, people that had heart and a mind. I had a mind and a lot of hearts, but not the discipline to implement the mind. So I followed the fastidiousness of the University of the Marine Corps, but I took the values that the Kincaids or the Callahans or the Jim Rays or the educated kids, whether they're blue-collar sons of Christian pastors or however they got through to their hard work and blue-collar ethic, I did not have that discipline. I had a different type of discipline, but I was bright enough and still continue to be respectful of that civility that is not always in my grasp. But I don't struggle with that. I'm aware of it, and I use that lack of connection as a threat to the less civilized to keep them actually, unfortunately, aware of their own lack of humanity, not through intimidation, but unfortunately sometimes. But I lead through care and compassion and show an understanding of it all. I show respect to engineers, but I also am harsh on my coworkers that aren't compassionate, that care more about what they perceive they're able to gain out of their perception of the circumstances, whether they're 60 or 23 on my job, and I literally have people in those age groups. But I do. Callahan died of throat cancer, probably from tobacco. He was a very clean living person, and with a master's degree, ultimately. And
well, but was he down in Southern Illinois?
Oh yeah, for 17 years.
Well, you know, that's another one of those sacrifice zones, Mark.
Well, you know,
our buddy Jeff Biggers hails from down that way, from an area known as Little Egypt.
Now Biggers was what? He sounds what's that? Who is he?
Jeff is an American Book Award winning author, the author of Reckoning at Eagle Creek and one of my very favorite books, The United States of Appalachia. He's got a new book coming out about the breakdown of representative democracy, little d stuff, in Arizona, and he is a tireless participant in the struggle against parasitic ways of the coal industry. And Southern Illinois is, of course, rife with strip mining.
I have to say, Bob, and of course you don't do it because you're maybe brighter than I, but Peabody obviously is barely with this blue-collar person. But, you know, where I grew up in Springfield, a cute, very, very cute middle Midwest town, much like you, I've not been to Madison, but Springfield's a very cute town. I fell in love with a girl in West Palm Beach about 10 years ago, and I took her out there. I mean, it's like something out of the movies. And up there, I mean, sidewalks and humans and not overly commercialized, in my opinion, compared to a lot of things we see in America, but clean little town with pride and kind of a neat weather pattern. But Springfield has a coal plant right on its lake, like many towns throughout the United States. And just like the nuclear fallout from the testing in the 50s, if you look at the map, no surprise. But, I mean, it showered every inch. And I share with my friends at work, you know, with their some of their cowboy comments. I said, you know, you can say what you want about India and Pakistan having a shootout, or we need to just nuke these people or bomb those people. That remember that when Chernobyl melted down, that they found radiation in various places around the world. So all this cowboy talk can have
disastrous consequences
in your own backyard. And the coal where I grew up in Springfield. I'm sure showered people, whoever's in the wind pattern of that before this. And my father actually, my father was not an engineer, but he hired the first black engineer for the city of Springfield, Illinois. He was given the option to hire the engineer that he wanted to work with to put this first scrubber in Springfield concerning coal. And he hired a guy younger than himself. And I used to go to work with my dad and sit there at the trailer and watch them go over the blueprints and him, basically my dad, take orders from this young black engineer. And I went, gosh, I'm looking at civil rights, engineering rights, and knowledge rights proceed in a progressive fashion. And I'm 11 years old. And I went, that's really neat. And it's helping us environmentally. And temporarily before we were, you know, before Americans know what osmotic power or wind power or motion power or so, you know, now we're in Afghanistan for what, lithium for batteries for the Chinese market that we can do. But I also wanted to say, Bob, that Christopher Hedges and also Bill Maher 2 weeks ago on HBO, and maybe 3 weeks ago now, maybe 2 weeks for sure, mentioned at the beginning of the show about what I am, as a rudimentary person, trying to intimate to you who is knowledgeable about pollution, how important the coal industry and how detrimental it is to our life with mercury and lead and pollution. And he opened basically a show talking about it. And then Christopher Hedges on September 11th, 9/11, talking about it is the biggest terrorist in the world. And so I'm learning from you, like I always tell you. And I'm not big on emotion, but I'm big on the facts. And that's why I resort to educated people like yourself. So,
well, thank you very kindly, Mark. Sincerely, I don't feel like I deserve to be in the same company as people like Christopher Hedges. I mean, they're real thinkers. I don't think anybody who is engaged in the struggle against mountaintop removal is over, or will be anytime soon, the passing of Larry Gibson. The fact of the matter is, we're still not over the passing of Judy Bonds. And I don't know if we ever will be with that either. But with that as a backdrop, it should be borne in mind that it's possible, that later this week, the business of the people of the United States, Mark, will be interrupted. It will be interrupted by a reactionary, radical Republican House of Representatives, which is going to spend a day talking about a phony baloney piece of crap legislation they've put forward called the Stop the War on Coal Act. And I'm about up to my gullet with that stuff. And I keep thinking, stop the war on coal? There is no war on coal. How about we stop the war on us?
How about stop the coal on war?
Yeah, exactly. You see? It is a desperate and existential struggle. There's no getting around it. And I appreciate your kind words more than you know, Mark. And your willingness to help us keep this whole thing lit up and going, it means more than I can competently express, and that's a fact. So every kind word you just said is met and returned in kind towards you, and that's a fact. Mark, have a wonderful evening, and I hope we'll talk soon.
Bob, can I say just one quick thing?
Sure.
Something you alluded to earlier in your show, as a comparison, and I thought it won't surprise you, but it's President Obama was elicited by Netanyahu with his sweaty, pale, gray forehead. I guess he needed to come to the White House to tell the evangelical Christians in Texas that we needed to bomb Iran. And President Obama said, can somebody take care of him? We have more accurate priorities. And then suddenly on 60 Minutes, they had the director of the Mossad saying to attack Iran was considered a stupid thing. And there's basically nobody in the Pentagon that thought that we should. I don't know if the listeners realize, all the G.I. Janes out there, that Iran sits on the fourth largest army in the world. They're not going to disband when they're told to, and get in blue jeans.
Well, no, exactly. What you have in Netanyahu is the classic case that we recognize here in the hills and generally in redneck country, of one fella standing looking at two others saying, "Come on, let's you and him fight." I mean, I thought it took a lot of nerve to say that the U.S. has got to go in and do Iran, because Israel doesn't feel like doing its own dirty work.
Did you see the interview with the Mossad director?
No, I didn't.
Well, you were busy making a difference, and as a concerned citizen, I would share with yourself one thing militarily that I really don't wish I didn't have to care or give a shit about, but the Mossad director was so down to earth. He actually said that he has a lot of Arab friends, and he has an affection for Arab people, and that the, he said that Iran doesn't have a couple nuclear facilities or a nuclear facility. They have dozens. And so that extrapolates the reason that the bin Laden of Israel, Netanyahu, was eliciting our help, because when you attack, even though I was a combat engineer in the Marine Corps, you can't attack something militarily, whether it's one or two targets, when there's 24 targets, without doing it simultaneously, because you will get anti-aircraft fire, which will take down their beautiful superior pilots, which amount to about, I'm guessing, the state of Kentucky's capabilities with pilotry. So they would need American help. So I would just ask Americans, if you believe in all the Jesus, I don't know, was Jesus for war, Bob? You're more knowledgeable about.
I've never seen anything that indicates that he was.
Oh God!
You know, the night that they arrested him, Peter pulled out his sword and lopped off the ear of some Roman soldier, so we're told.
Uh-huh.
And Jesus looked at him and said, "Put up thy sword," and then picked up the ear and stuck it back on the centurion and did, you know, one last miracle.
He felt compassion for a guy that was wanting to kill him.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Because he, just as Socrates had 300 years before, said that the highest, most noble, most difficult form of love is to love one's enemy.
No, they've not confirmed it. They said General Grant may have hung two Union soldiers for the abuse of their horses, trying to get them to cross a river, and then that's been denied, but that because of Grant's upraising, seeing his father as a tanner and what he had to do to animals as a child, Grant was...
Couldn't stand it.
Traumatized by it.
Yeah.
And actually, coincidentally, getting back to Daniel Callahan, the leading expert on Ulysses S. Grant, Hiram Ulysses Grant.
Yeah, there was no Simpson. His name was Hiram Ulysses Grant.
He hit on a barge because his father got him a scholarship to West Point that he never wanted to go to. And as he steps on the barge, he says, "Someone's appeal, he heard this. Someone heard this. I hope this barge sinks," as he floated eastward to West Point. So I say to the Robert E. Lee folks, Robert E. Lee said that he wished he'd never worn a uniform. We need to pull together, America. And Bob Kincaid is an exemplary American of never been apart. So I've always respected your leadership skills, Bob, and I appreciate the humanity wherever you got yours from.
Thank you, Mark. But honest to God, I don't think I could lead a chorus of Kumbaya, but I appreciate it.
You've got it going on, brother, and we appreciate, we all, Albert and Sandra, we all appreciate that humanity wherever you goddamn got that from. I appreciate it, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you kindly. You have a good evening.
Peace.
Bye now. It's our buddy Mark, and we will continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, fair to middling. How was your trip?
Long, they always are. Tiresome, they always are. But in the middle of it, it was filled with a lot of happiness and a lot of new stuff learned and a lot of brilliant things learned. So all in all, I would say excellent.
Well, you always seem to be innervated when you come back from these trips in a little better think state than you are when you're hanging around here. That's for sure.
Well, I think I get if I'm just hanging around for too long, Jim, I start into brooding, and when I start to brood, I get cranky.
Oh, I believe that.
But you know, for me, I mean, just you know, and I know you feel the same way, or at least to a certain extent. There's something. One, there's always something special about going somewhere one has never really been. That was Madison. And then something as simple as a walk up Pennsylvania Avenue and just taking time to look at stuff always sends my mind flying. yesterday I saw for the first time and had never seen it before, the Pennsylvania Memorial to General George Gordon Meade. Right there, just past, the museum where I read the Charleston Gazette front page that talked about the governor's ad that said, that the hopes of our children under Obama had darkened. You know, I was still chuckling about that, and I saw this statue. And you know me, I see a statue, I stop and, well, who the heck is that? And lo and behold, this one was George Gordon Meade, who looked an awful lot like Robert E. Lee, apparently. But it was a terrible, it was, I don't know if you know the statue I'm talking about. It was stuck in storage for years.
Yeah, like they just brought it out. But they brought it out eventually.
And I was fascinated by it because, on the one hand, I thought it was Lee for a minute. I couldn't imagine there'd be a statue to Lee in D.C. Maybe there is. But the second thing was the composition. And I guess it was, commissioned in 1913 and finished by 1923 or something. And it's got Meade standing there getting his cloak removed by a couple of naked people, who it turns out are the manifestations of chivalry and valor. And the cloak is the cloak of war.
It's an allegorical statue.
It's very much so. And the thing that occurred to me, though, Jim, is that if you have to explain it all, the visual aspects are not getting through.
Well, you have to see it, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do. And grim-visaged winged war stands exactly opposite General Meade.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, as Mark, I believe it was Mark who was your last caller, and my compliments to him and what he had to say. Very interesting and very moving. You know, when you realize exactly what these statues mean and these allegorical representations of sculpture mean and what they represent, it does give one pause for thought, that's for sure.
Well, when you and you consider the time in which it was erected, and you think that, I mean, 1920, the world, the nation was still not over the Civil War.
Well, they're not over it now.
We're not over it now. That precise. That was going to be the next thing out of my mouth.
Well, I know. By the way, I'm just looking at my two things here. I'm just looking at my my sister's Facebook, and she has written, "Remember Neville Chamberlain, Jimmy Carter. We are living with a total breakdown of the Middle East. We cannot, and there's something, appeasement. I'm afraid for America. We need strong leadership, not campaigning." I never could quite understand what she said because when she, I guess on her computer, I don't know what's going on here. And I thought about that and I said, well, okay. A little wonder that I hear from sis there very often. But
I guess we're to assume that, Barack Obama is being weak in the Middle East. Is that the upshot? I mean,
I don't know exactly what she means. I can't speak for her.
Because as far as I can tell, it looks like all the campaigning's being done on the Bishop Willard Romney side, you know, when he's got his old business partner Netanyahu out there carrying water for him. I mean, that's kind of novel in this kind of a scenario, isn't it? That a challenger would have a business partner who's a prime minister of a bellicose nation, paranoid bellicose nation that's trying to goad the United States into war as an act of politics?
Well, that remains to be seen what they're trying to do, and it would appear that it isn't the first time that we have been led into taking someone else's chestnuts out of the fire, so to speak.
But in this case, I don't think it's necessarily even a proven fact, Jim, that Israel's chestnuts are in said fire, is it?
I don't know, Bob. I mean, the Arab Spring, in my opinion, has borne some very strange fruit. And I can understand the position of Israel being just an enclave, a small nation in the middle of what they are. I mean, the jury's out on that, but my personal opinion, if I were an Israeli, I can certainly relate to how they feel and what they said, particularly given their background of the Holocaust and things of that nature. And, of course, Israel has made a number of mistakes, and they are what they are. And that's all I can say. The jury is still out on that as far as I'm concerned. But I wrote back to her, and I just put it on her Facebook, and I'm sure she's probably boiling right now. And I'll just read it for you real quickly. And I put, politics, the eternal sea, as it adds to one shore, its waves erode one shore and add to another, be it the one or the 99% of our beloved nation. The late Gore Vidal once wrote about our party, our two-party system, the property party, with one end being Republican and the other Democrat. We are in a 1914 situation, and as Bismarck once said, the Balkans, the sum of our flashpoint, is not worth the bones of a Pomeranian grenadier. God bless our America, not an empire.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear.
And I was just thinking about what Romney was talking about as far as resetting the button on Russia.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, I think it means going back to a Cold War situation.
Yeah, he's got a hankering for a Cold War.
And that's just real dangerous. Because people might think that all these nuclear weapons have been basically scrapped and stuff like that, but there's still enough to go around. And as I said before on this program, it only takes 12 keystrokes to redirect a nuclear weapon wherever it needs to be sent.
Jeez.
So we could go back to pre-1991 rather quickly. And I feel that Mr. Romney, particularly when he revealed his true feelings about the 47% of Americans, and it just indicates just how cold-blooded this guy is, thinking only of himself and thinking only of the vested interests of the people who will profit by his ascendancy to power. And it scares the hell out of me to have that man in the White House, particularly with the guy outside his bedroom with the nuclear football.
Well, you remember probably better than I do, because you've got a few years on me, Jim. I was a baby at the time, but you were probably a young man. It's a very, maybe a teenager. But do you remember the campaign slogan of Barry Goldwater?
Well, in your heart, you know he's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you remember the satire take on it that was had afterward? In your heart, you know he's right, but in your gut, you know he's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got. I don't even think in your heart you know he's right applies to Bishop Willard Romney, Jim. But in your gut, you know he's nuts. Absolutely, beyond, without a shadow of a doubt. The problem with all of the seven deadly sins, so called, is that sooner or later, those sins will consume the sinner. I think you know what I mean.
And he
has been utterly consumed to the point that I think his brain has been affected by his avarice. And avarice is pretty high on the seven deadly sins list, isn't it?
Pretty much. And it can definitely consume your think state, and that's exactly what it's done to him. I mean, this guy is living in somewhere in the Moronosphere as far as his real contact with the people of this country. I really do. I mean, I don't think that he has any real concept of the 47%, and I think that this guy is...
I don't think he came up with that by himself either, do you?
No, probably not, I'm sure. But I'll tell you one thing, it sure as hell backfired on him, didn't it?
I don't know if it has.
Not
I mean, it's certainly backfired in the community in which we converse. It's certainly backfired among progressive people, decent people. But I don't know.
All over the television.
I mean, granted, there are some people trying to put some distance between themselves and his remarks. New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez, who spoke at his convention, has said New Mexico, her state, has many people who are living at the poverty level, and their votes count just as much as anyone else. And I read that quote, that little bit of pushback, and I thought, you know, she may have actually admitted the essential problem for the Republican Party, Jim, and that is that our votes are supposed to count. And that is why the entire Republican machine and all of its various and sundry financial supporters and backers and upholders and whatever are working so tirelessly to make sure that our votes don't get counted. Because, you know, if you can stop somebody at the ballot box with one of these voter ID laws, that's one thing. But then again, if they actually get through and get to cast a vote, well, there's video game voting where you might, I don't know, get an extra round in Pac-Man or turn out to have voted for Willard Romney. And the optical scan machines are troubling and troublesome.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But what we're finding out is that old and this goes back, and we had a conversation about it back then. This goes back to that Ken Burns documentary about Prohibition, and what was his name? The father of that movement who realized he didn't have to have the majority of Americans. He just had to have a plurality that could swing an election one way or the other. Well, when Willard Romney says that there's 47% and he's and the job is to convince 5% or 4%, then what he is admitting is the same thing that was admitted in the struggle to enforce prohibition or impose prohibition upon the United States. He knows that the Republican Party has a chance in any election that is neck and neck, and that they are willing to make it neck and neck by any means necessary, whether that be voter suppression or voter depression or voter oppression by all of the means that I just mentioned, either by getting progressive peoples and people or people of color or, you know, the Latino community, what have you, so depressed that they don't want to go to the polls. That's step one, keep them away from the polls. And then impose the voter ID laws, so that's a second layer. And then, like I said, if you get through the door, because we have electronic video game voting, there's no guarantee that your vote will be counted.
Oh, I heard an interesting thing about your counterpart over here about the voting machines and how safe they are, and because they are standalone machines and they're not connected to a central computer, his words, not mine, that they are okay.
Well, and along the way, I heard something else as I was heading to D.C. last week. That dumb bastard actually called for nuclear weapons to be launched against Libya. And that was just breathtaking, even coming from a 332nd tier right winger like him.
Oh, that's what he said.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Nuclear weapons against Libya.
Yeah, wanted them nuked.
I normally can handle him only about once a week, and then I just basically have to buzz off because I don't want that idiot spoiling my day or increasing my blood pressure or whatever, but I didn't hear that one. But can you imagine what would happen if that were the case?
You throw a match on a sea of gasoline. It's the same effect, isn't it, Jim?
Well, I mean, you know, it proved to me that there are these people out there who feel that some type of nuclear war is not only acceptable and winnable, acceptable in terms of the consequence of loss and things of that nature. And if there are people who still believe that, if they think that they could get past any type of nuclear conflagration, particularly in the area like the Middle East. I mean, the Middle East is just boiling right now.
Yeah.
And I heard an interesting thing on NPR this morning,
And, you know, I know that you have no love for Mubarak or Khomeini or some of the other strongmen over there, or even Saddam. But even they were more tolerant of other religions than Islam than what's coming about now. And to me, that is very frightening. I mean, the plight of the Coptic Christians in Egypt is very, very precarious right now.
And yet, at the same time, Israel wants to nuke Iran, who has the most sizable Jewish population in the Middle East outside Israel. And there are no, you know, there are no ovens, there are no camps, there are no one's being, they're allowed to practice their religion. In fact, super Orthodox rabbis went from Israel over to the Holocaust Denial Conference, that was hosted by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
Oh, he hosted that?
Yeah.
But he is the one who said that it never happened, right?
Yeah, he's a Holocaust denier.
Okay. I don't know, Bob. It's a very knotty situation. And like I said, as far as my own particular opinion is concerned, the jury is still out on what will happen. But it would appear to me as though the Middle East is really, really gearing up for something. And what? I don't know.
Well, everybody's waiting for the other shoe to drop, aren't they?
Yeah, I believe so.
Everybody's waiting for the United States to do something stupid. And I want to take this moment, since we're talking about the United States doing something stupid, to recommend to you a documentary. You will not, I mean, get the industrial-sized box of Kleenex next to you when you're watching it, Jim. But I had the privilege, Friday evening, when I was in Madison, of watching Phil Donahue present a screening of his film, Body of War.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how it's being distributed, but I'm pretty sure that it's findable out there. I tell you what, if somebody finds it on the interweb tubes, I'll send you the link.
The Body of War.
Body of War. It is the story of a young man who, on his fifth day in country in Iraq, riding along in an unarmored troop transport with not even so much as a canvas covering over the back, you know, one of those trucks.
Yeah, Humvees.
I think it was one of the bigger ones.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of them. Took an AK-47 round by his clavicle and was paralyzed from the middle of his chest downward. And along the way, the film catalogs the entire litany of the most repugnant lies that went along with starting that nightmare.
Oh boy, that was a real keeper, wasn't it?
It is something that if there was anything to be forgiven, the United States would spend the rest of its existence begging some cosmic force for forgiveness.
Well, like I say, and I've said before, we went in there and completely desecularized that country. As bad as Saddam may have been, and Uday and Qusay or whomever they were, now they are living with the fruits of that particular Pyrrhic victory. And I think we're going to be sorry for that for a long time.
Well, along the way in the progress of the film, it's not a spoiler, we know how it ends, the war, if not the subject of the film. It is interspersed with comments from the Senate voting on the resolution for the use of force.
Right.
And I assure you, by the time you get to the end of the movie, Jim, you will have wept real tears.
Well, I'm sure. Please send me the link on it.
I don't have it in front of me, but if somebody finds it, I will forward it to you.
I appreciate that. And also, just send me your spam mail address, will you?
Oh, sure.
I don't copy things very well, and I don't have any pens or pencils to hand. But, you know, when I see the results of our wars in Afghanistan and the effects it's had upon the American soldier, they are not good. I did see a film last night called Stop Loss.
I remember that somehow as being, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one you can be, I can recommend to you too. Because basically what Stop Loss was, is a backdoor type of draft.
Yeah.
And basically what it's done to the men and women who've gone over there, sent by old men who will never have to bear the burdens of those wounds, be they physical or mental. And it's just, it's really dreadful.
It is. I remember when the issue was fresh, and that's what I think there's value in a film like that or this film Body of War, insofar as it is a stunning, it is a shocking or traumatizing reminder of what was done in our name by the most cynical and bitter of politicians.
Oh, absolutely. And these people don't understand what war really is all about because they don't have to fight it. Currently on PBS, there's a program about death in the Civil War and the daguerreotypes and the first types of photography that recorded the carnage of that war. And when you have to deal with the blood and the guts and the destruction of human life and the lives of combatants and, of course, non-combatants, there's nothing really glorious about it. It's a grim, ghastly affair. And it's one that we need to learn to avoid, but I'm afraid we're not going to. Because there are always some going to be these idiots who are going to say, well, we're going to have to do this or do what that idiot over here said about using nuclear weapons against Libya. And that guy never wore a uniform in his life.
Nope.
Well, look, you've got a good program going on here. Let me let you go, and you got some other people I know that want to talk. But,
well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, and I just got a link from Mark to the it's part one of five of the film over on YouTube, so after the show I will forward that along to you.
Okay. Well, God bless Mark, and I thank him for his service.
Thank you, Jim. Have a good evening.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim from across the river, Isaac, sent me an email during our conversation. Who is this guy over there you keep talking about? I don't want to give him the free publicity, but he's just he's a 392nd tier right winger. And you listen to some of them and you go, well, like on the way to D.C., I happened to catch a little bit of Mark Levin. Now there's a guy with a voice made for print. Not Mark Levine, Mark Levin, right wing, gas bag, jackass, whatever. But this guy over in Beckley is a total moron. I mean, moron with a capital Y. And this is the guy who gave us the phrase Titanic Tuesday by suggesting that there are fossilized seashells in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Once upon a time, he also said, this is New River country. It flows through the county where he broadcasts. It was suggested that the New River flows south, and wants to nuke Libya. Right. Yeah. So I guess we have found our way. Texas Betsy reminding me that our Cassie, her brother was subjected to the stop-loss policy twice. It was very real, very much real. It is time to wrap things up for this evening. I will note that this program, and by the way, well, another reminder, if you get to see the PBS film on its American Experience program, Death and the Civil War. Dr. John mentioned that to me a little bit ago, as Jim just mentioned it. I guess it's running now. It will be streaming tomorrow at pbs.org, and look up Death and the Civil War. I'm going to try to watch it because, you know, the Civil War, I mean, the reason there are so many Civil War monuments around Washington, D.C. is that Washington, D.C. was the front at one point. Just was. Well worth the watch. Now, I will remind you that this program is entirely based upon listener support and listener contributions. We are working toward making our monthly fundraising goal, which is not, it doesn't take in everything it takes to keep this going, but we're working toward it. There's a little bar graph at headonradionetwork.com, and if you go and have a look, you will see that we are very near to our goal. We are near, it looks on that bar graph that we are nearer than we are, because the kind gift that sent me out to be able to participate in Fighting Bob Fest is included in there, because that was the plane ticket. So you need to subtract about $320 from that line there, and you'll see where we are. And it is very helpful. It is utterly necessary that we meet the monthly goal each month in order for the horn to continue, based upon some economic setbacks that have transpired over the last few months, and they've been brutal. So thank you everyone for your calls, your emails, the contributions of your time, even sitting and listening. There are so many of you that listen and I seldom hear from, and it is and I love to hear from you. We love to hear from you, all of us in the Horn family, simply because it lets us know that you're there, and it lets us know that you're part of the conversation, even if you're listening and not emailing or not calling. What you're doing is you're sharing time in being part of this little experiment in communications, this little experiment in community building. And as I'm reminded every time I meet another member of the Horn family, it's really special. So thank you all. Have a wonderful evening. It's wonderful to be home. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Atta girl, Betsy. Betsy has made heroic strides in her rehabilitation of late. And I'm really proud of her and proud for her. We all are. Thanks to John Fox in Australia, who takes care of our web and engineering needs. Wow. Thank you, John. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Not a single program comes through the horn that doesn't come through the good offices of the White Rose Society. Passing its 10th anniversary this year, Ben Birch's effort at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. AICACT.org. You can go to AICACT.org, you can go to CRMW.net, and in both places you can learn how to be a vital part of the ongoing struggle to end Appalachia's agony. Go there. Seriously. You can even get the coolest T-shirt in America, the Save the Endangered Hillbilly T-shirt. I think you'll like it, and it's always a conversation starter. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn. There's a lot of bad wood underneath.
can't find together, there's